The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news updates with Kathy Romano.
It is a Thursday, and it is October 18th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, a 20-inch water main break in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia has caused major flooding on a well-traveled intersection to Buckle. East Girard Avenue is closed from Frankfort Avenue to Marlborough Street. Officials say they will expand the closure to Delaware Avenue as the repairs continue. The Philadelphia Water Department received a call about 11 o'clock last night of a street collapse and water gushing at the intersection. Crews arrived and searched for the correct valves to shut off the water at about 2:15. The water department shut off the water main. Customers in the surrounding areas reported low water pressure or no water at all. Most of their service has been restored, but they say there are still homes on one side of Girard that do not have water service. The Philadelphia Water Department says service will be restored to those homes later in the day. Some businesses did get water in their basements, and the water department is urging people to check with SEPTA this morning because buses are being detoured around
that just
where this is.
Completely sucks. What was it, a couple of months ago, there was that massive one in the city?
Yeah.
You know, and then the just businesses get destroyed, and it's dealing with it, and the ramifications go on and on and on.
Yeah, so most people got their water back, but they did say, you know, some businesses got water in the basement.
Man.
And, yeah, there's going to be detours this morning and stuff like that, so we'll keep you posted in traffic. The Washington Post has published a new column by missing Saudi writer Jamal Khashoggi, in which he warns that government in the Middle East have been given free rein to continue silencing the media at an increasing rate. The Post published the column Wednesday, more than 2 weeks after Khashoggi was last seen entering a Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and only hours after a gruesome account in a Turkish newspaper alleged that Saudi officials cut off Khashoggi's fingers and then decapitated him inside the consulate while his fiance waited outside. The Saudi government, including Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, has denied any involvement. In a note at the top of the column, Post Global Opinion's editor Karen Atia said she received the essay from Khashoggi's translator and assistant a day after he was reported missing. Khashoggi first began writing for the Post's opinion section in September of 2017, and his columns criticized the prince and the direction of the Saudi kingdom. In the opt titled Jamal Khashoggi, What an Arab World Needs Most is Free Expression, Khashoggi recounted the imprisonment of a prominent writer who spoke against the Saudi establishment and cited an incident in which the Egyptian government seized control of a newspaper. Friday night's Mega Millions lottery drawing may bring a jackpot approaching $1 billion. No one claimed the top prize on Tuesday night's drawing, but there was a $1 million winner that was sold at a beer store in Folsom, Delaware County.
Casey, oh my God, that's my stopping grounds. Was it Easy Beverage?
Yes.
Oh,
there
wow.
You go.
I wonder if I know this human being.
So a local woman.
Sure you do.
I might.
Yeah.
There's got to be at least, like, I would say, 3 degrees of separation between me and
okay.
this.
All right. All right. Yeah. Let's hope.
So apparently the owner of Easy Beverage said that she's a local woman and she comes in, she plays the lottery regularly. She came in Tuesday night about 7:30. She bought the ticket and then he said she came back on Wednesday just to verify. He said she knew she won, but, like, you know, you're just double checking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
That's
good for
insane.
Her. Yeah.
The woman correctly called the 5 Mega Millions numbers. Correctly naming the Mega Ball number would have brought her more than $600 million. Easy Beverage gets $5,000 as a bonus for selling the winning ticket. Now a store in Levittown, Bucks County, also sold $1 million
worth
of tickets.
Oh, my God. This is Delco versus Bucksco, man.
What is this?
Delco.
What?
I swear.
Just happened.
It's crazy.
Oh,
Kathy?
My God. Levittown and Folsom.
Kathy!
That's both of your areas, not just the counties.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, my God. This may have just bridged the gap.
Oh, I got to go find all my Folsom Falcons football pictures and baseball pictures.
The war is over.
It's over.
It's over.
Oh.
Nothing's over.
All it took was $1 million for two residents.
God. You don't know
that maybe you're connected to.
Oh, that's so great.
That's hilarious.
Yes. The Mega Millions jackpot is now up to $900 million. Lottery officials raised the estimated prize Wednesday less than a day after another drawing without a winner increased the prize to $868 million. The next drawing will be Friday. The estimated jackpot for the drawing could be the second largest lottery prize in U.S.
That's
history.
Amazing. Mm-hmm.
Mega Millions is played in 44 states, D.C., and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
What? I thought she had a little ways to go, and I wanted one of our intros from the Bucks Go Fight.
Oh, my God. That's so coincidental. That's,
right?
That is absolutely... That's hilarious. Yeah,
it makes it all the more magical.
Yeah. I will be interested to see. I think, Case, I'm not sure. I don't think she released her name yet. They didn't say much about the winner from Levittown, but right, I'd be interested to see if either of us know the residents that won.
Yeah. Oh, man. Finish them. Oh, that was okay. It didn't say Bucksco versus Delco. Oh, my God. That's
Bucksco versus Delco. Fight.
That's so cool. Well, Case, congratulations.
I would imagine there's a fairly good shot you know this person.
Listen, there's a really good shot that if I don't know this person,
you know somebody
that I know somebody that knows this person. Totally. I'm like 100% positive that I know somebody that knows this person.
How much you owe then, do you think?
I would say half.
Half, yeah.
Half
yeah.
of it, you
yeah,
know? True. There's a good chance that I used to deliver this lady's newspaper.
There you go.
I delivered her either her town talk or her daily talk.
Town talk.
Yes. Yeah. And she never tipped me.
No, we know.
She never tipped me.
I'll take the tip now. How about $500,000?
I'll tell you what. There's a good chance that she lives on one of those streets of Rutledge.
In Rutledge, one of the nine streets.
I have two aunts that still live in Levittown. I'm hoping it's one of them.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? How much would you get, do you think?
Nothing. They would just be taken care of.
Does this potentially mean that there will be a new box for one of your relatives to live in?
You know what? It's funny. You bring up my cousin who did for 45 minutes every single day for, I think it was like a year, went into a box, a cardboard box, and he just got on Facebook, so I can show you guys.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I want to see the all right. Sensory deprivation box.
Did they eat sand as well, or is that
somebody else? No, that was... Preston, no, those people were crazy.
You're just being crazy now.
All right, let's do sports this morning.
Ball sacks are yummy.
Clayton Kershaw bounced back from one of his worst postseason starts with one of his best pitching. The Dodgers passed the Milwaukee Brewers 5-2 last night in a 3-2 series lead in the National League Championship Series. The Dodgers haven't been in back-to-back World Series since losing to the Yankees in 1977 and 78.
I don't give a...
They were beaten by Houston in Game 7 last year. Game 6 of the NLCS is tomorrow night in Milwaukee. In the American League, Andrew Benintendi made a diving catch in left field with the bases loaded for the final out, and the Red Sox held off the Houston Astros 8-6 to take a 3-1 lead in that series. The Red Sox moved within one win of their first World Series trip since winning the title in 2013. Game 5 is tonight in Houston. Justin Verlander will pitch for the Astros with their season on the line, and David Price will start for Boston on 3 days' rest after Chris Sale was ruled out while recovering from a stomach illness. Game time is at 8:09. Both the Sixers and Flyers were off last night, and both teams return to action tonight. The Sixers have their home opener against the Chicago Bulls and tip-off in South Philly is set for 8 o'clock. The Flyers, meanwhile, will be on the road with a game in Columbus against the Blue Jackets. Both teams have 3 wins on the season, and game time is at 7 o'clock. And the Eagles are still the Super Bowl champs. And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right, thanks a bunch, Kath. We are ready to go. We got a lot of things planned for today. First and foremost, I'll continue to remind you, as this is going on, we'll do birthday bucks. Once again, 8 a.m., your chance to win $1,000. Wouldn't that be nice? So listen up. We'll give you the word that you have to enter, and I'll tell you how to do it. And then we'll get that as close to 8 o'clock as we can. We have a concert announcement this morning. It's going to take place before that, around 7 o'clock, as close to that as we can get that. We'll do the information for you, and it's a biggie. So we'll have that, and we'll give you all the details that you need to know on getting your tickets and so on. We also have, for the first time in a little while, we have a Not Your Average Listener stopping by today. And we have a new sponsor. It's Primo Hoagies.
Awesome.
That are going to sponsor this. And it's up to you, dear friend, to hear this person's story and determine whether or not they are worthy of the cash prize that we'll have. We also have one of our favorite guests, Mr. Derek Pitts from the Franklin Institute, who's going to be stopping by this morning. And from tomorrow until November 25th, the Franklin Institute's Tuttleman IMAX Theater is going to be showing a special limited time presentation. patronym of Stanley Kubrick's classic 1968 film, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I'm going to see it a couple times.
And apparently they were influenced to do it by your suggestions.
But that's wonderful. I'm all for it. Yeah.
It's in a rare 70 millimeter film projection. So pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Derek Pitts, not only just about that, but all things space and whatever he's got going on, because there's always some cool stuff.
Very learned man. Why he comes here, we don't know.
We also have, and I'm going to give these away now because we have so many things to do. And our friends from Bates Motel are going to be coming by today, from what I understand, along with Dunkin' Donuts. And
nice.
Our cream of the scream. You know, I'll give away three of these now. I'll hang on to a few more just for later on when they stop in. But we have the cream of the scream stop tonight at the Bates Motel in Glen Mills. It will be at, you need to be there at 6 o'clock. We'll be there from 6 to 8. So 215-263-WMMR. We'll take three callers if you're available to do it tonight. It's going to be a perfect fall night. It's going to be a little bit on the cool side.
You know, it's going to be perfect
for precipitation whatsoever.
Hot cocoa.
It's going to be wonderful. Enjoy your hot cocoa.
Hot cocoa. Ooh, it's hot water and cocoa mix.
No, it's, whatever mix they use is damn good. Yeah.
I think it's a special brand called Swiss Mist.
Is it? Ooh, yes. With little mini marshmallows? Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get you on board. Call right now, and you'll have a great time, guaranteed. Also, an appearance tonight, Casey Boy, the Bud Light Philly Tour, tonight at Barnaby's in Westchester from 7 to 9. You got tickets to give away tonight?
Yes, every single one that we do, there's going to be tickets to give away. I'm not sure which game we're giving away tickets to, but if you come out, I'll be giving away tickets before I leave there at 9 o'clock. So I'll be doing the Bates thing with you.
Yes. Wow, you're a busy man tonight.
And then I'm going to scoot down the road and head to Barnaby's in Westchester.
Maybe you won't have to do that at all, though, if you find out that you really know this person who won the money.
Right.
That's true.
Then I'm out of here.
You could be off the... Just totally blow it off.
Yes. All right, so...
I'm on Easy Street, suckers.
These things and more taking place during the course of the show. Let's take a break, come back in a second, and the entertainment stories along with the stupid question. That's what we'll get to next. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Do you want the most important purchase of your life to be based on your negotiating skills? Not the case at Steven Singer Jewelers. You are guaranteed to get the perfect price every day. They make the experience of buying an engagement ring easy with no BS. Check him out at the other corner of 8th and Walnut in Philly or online at IHateStevenSinger.com. Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, you know that I go to Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spas. Whether you want a rejuvenating massage or a refreshing facial, Hand and Stone is the place to go. Introductory massage or facial start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their over 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
All right, so stupid question this morning. We are going to, hang on a second, making a note here. We're going to be giving away four-pack of tickets for Temple football on Saturday. They are playing nationally ranked Cincinnati at the Link. Question that I have for you this morning is, who invented the saxophone?
Who invented the saxophone?
Yep.
We should all know this.
We should, and we're all going to know it in a little bit. 215-263-WMMR, who invented the saxophone, possibly the sexiest instrument ever created.
Absolutely. One Mr. Kenny G would add credence to that.
Not forget that.
Yes. My son's playing it right now.
Is he really?
Yeah. I tried to learn it, Nick, years ago.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well, here's the deal with that. Leading into it, it sounds terrible.
Well, and when your kid picks it up, you're like, oh, God, the violin would have been better.
Yeah.
But he's making progress, and he's a year and a half in, and it's actually starting to sound like he knows what he's doing a little bit. It's impressive.
May I suggest something, Nick? What you do is you first make sure that he wants to learn the drums, then you ask him to try to learn the saxophone, then give him the trombone so that he can give up on music completely. Yeah. That's what happened to my life.
Here's a triangle.
Now, my daughter started off on the saxophone. She was actually really good kind of from the onset. But it was too heavy, so she switched to a lighter instrument.
Casey, try the trombone. The trombone case was as big as I was in elementary school.
Casey, she plays trumpet, right?
Now she plays trumpet.
I saw her play a solo. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And she's fearless.
And that was a while ago, too.
That was, she had been playing the trumpet for about 2 months. And she's like, yeah, I'll do a solo at the concert. I'm like, no.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, Steve, I know what you're talking about as far as forcing you to play an instrument, yeah, another instrument.
I wanted the drums!
It sucks.
I know.
It sucks that they have to do that, but they've got to fill out the band and the orchestra.
I get it.
And it's too bad because it can shy people away from playing the instrument that they want to.
Well, on the plus side, I think I know where that music teacher lives, and he'll be dead by the end of the year. It's been a lifelong search.
Let's go through some birthdays, shall we? It's Pam Dauber's birthday today on the 18th of October. She of Mork and Mindy fame. She was Mindy, obviously.
She was good in the... Did you watch the Robin Williams special?
I did.
Very emotional.
Oh, she had
her memories, yeah.
Yeah, she had a hard time getting through some of that.
Yeah.
You know, they had a special relationship, and...
And she's married to Mark Harmon, I believe, right?
No kidding.
Isn't that who her husband is?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I like Mark Harmon. Pam Dauber is 67 years old today. Nick's going to confirm that.
Yeah. They've been married since 1987.
Well, that's nice.
Wow.
It's Ditka's birthday today.
Ditka.
NFL Ditka. Hall of Famer.
Ditka.
Yeah, Ditka.
You're my Ditka.
Is 79 years old today. That was a pretty good bit on SNL.
I love that bit.
The Ditka.
And you don't stink. He's one of those guys, too, for Blue Inu.
Oh, yes, okay. He is. Martina Navratilova is 62, tennis legend.
The greatest of all time.
Yeah, she really dominated for a while. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yes.
Is 58, actor and kickboxer.
He could do no wrong for a little while there for me. Bloodsport.
I love them all.
Like, dude, yes.
I love them all. And he now does, he's on a commercial, a regular broadcast. What is it for, Preston? Do you know what it is?
No. I don't remember the product, but I remember seeing him, and the joke is that he's Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah. You know,
and so he has fun with his...
He does.
With his character what he's become.
Do you ever find out what that huge lump on his head is? You know, he's got that big bump on his forehead. He's always had it.
Uh-uh. No, I don't know.
He's done a bunch of commercials over the last years. He did Tostitos. He did that Volvo one that aired during the commercial.
Where he was doing the leg spread between the two vehicles.
That aired during the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said aired
during the commercial. That's all right. You were reading the word commercial. As you're looking at the video.
I've been doing that a lot lately.
I have too.
I apologize.
Jean-Claude is 58 today. Dawn Wells, Marianne from Gilligan's Island. 88 years old today.
You look at the pictures of her around the Gilligan's Island time. Super hot.
Yes. And in fact, I went back and I found some old pictures of her on the set, Steve.
Yeah.
And they had to have spray painted her at one point. She was so brown.
yeah.
That it looked like she'd been in one of the spray booths that you go into.
You know why
now.
They had to do that? Because the lighting of the time was so austere.
I believe they had to
really do the makeup to get them to read on film.
Yeah. I always thought she was adorable. She is 80 years old today.
Oh, 80?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you said 88 earlier. I was like, I didn't think she was that old.
No.
She may, you know how my cutoff is 80.
Yeah.
She may extend that.
She looks damn good now. She really does.
Yeah.
All right. So happy birthday to Dawn Wells. Wynton Marsalis, speaking of musicians, or we were talking about playing an instrument. He's a wonderful trumpeter. His brother Branford Marsalis is a great saxophone player.
So who was on Leno? Was it Branford?
Branford, yeah.
Yeah.
So Wynton Marsalis is 57 years old, and he's considered one of the all-time greats. Terry McMillan, author of Waiting to Exhale and How Stella Got Her Groove Back, 67 years old today. Zac Efron is celebrating his 31st. He's great. I like him. I'd like to talk to him sometime.
You cannot help but like that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He does get the self-deprecating thing. He's impossibly ripped up.
Yep.
Which you would want to hate him for and good-looking. But, yeah, He's good. Casey, what's the movie with De Niro?
Dirty Grandpa.
Is it Dirty Grandpa? Preston, it's a junk food movie, but you've got to see that movie. Casey, you saw it, right?
I did see it. And he kind of plays like the straight-laced.
He's the put-upon grandson.
He's 31 today. Frida Pinto, who is an actress from Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, I loved her.
She's 34 today.
She's gorgeous.
Bristol Palin is 28 years old today, daughter of Sarah Palin, reality TV star.
Is she on the Teen Mom series now? She's on the reboot, right?
Currently?
Yeah, I think she is.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, she is, right?
It's called Teen Mom OG.
OG.
It should be Teen Mom Oh Christ.
All right, well, she has a birthday today. She's 28. Lindsay Vaughn. Is that Tiger Woods?
That's Tiger's ex.
She is
beautiful.
She's gorgeous.
And talented, obviously, a champion skier.
Wanted to go out on a high note. Is she retired now, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. She had a pretty, I guess, a nasty wreck at some point recently.
She skied into a Yeti.
Well, that could
it
be
rarely
trouble.
Happens.
No, but yeah. No, but it is, you know what?
They're white.
And it's it's a bit of a hindrance or I guess a
it's
hazard
a yeah.
that some people don't consider in the world of skiing.
Absolutely.
So she's 34. And then an actress. Listen, Nick pulls up IMDb every morning and they highlight some birthdays. And sometimes I'll see people, I know that actor or actress, but I never knew their name. This girl's name is Joy Bryant, and I've had a crush on her. She was in the movie Antoine Fisher. She plays the girlfriend to Antoine.
Stunning.
She's also, and I recently saw her, Honey was on TV, and I was flipping through, and she was in that as well, and she wears really skimpy outfits in that. She's a great actress, very, very beautiful.
Incredible complexion.
Yes.
Just like us, Preston.
Just like us. She's 44
you
years old.
You do have a nice complexion.
Thank you.
Steve.
I actually, what is that, the Red Door Spas? Who runs those, Kathy?
Red Door Spas?
Mm-hmm. They're higher level.
They're like, you know.
Oh, Elizabeth Arden.
Elizabeth Arden,
yeah,
you're exactly right. So I was there, and the woman who was, you know, Claire convinced me. She could do one of these facial treatments and blah, blah, blah. Oh, I don't want to do this. So I did that, but the woman who was doing the thing on my face, you have very good skin. Yeah, tell that to my vitiligo. Shut up.
All right, we'll see if we can get an answer to today's stupid question. And the question is, who invented the saxophone? And I will go to, let's go to Rich and see if he knows the answer. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
Rich, who invented the saxophone?
Adolf Sax.
Adolf Sax?
Are you kidding me?
Did you not?
I would have thought that was a joke.
Yep, nope, that's really the guy's name, Adolf Sax.
Saxophone. Saxophone.
And since you got that right, we are going to set you up, my friend, with a four-pack of tickets as Temple Football battles nationally ranked Cincinnati Saturday at noon at Lincoln Financial Field, presented by the Temple University Alumni Association. Be a part of homecoming at the game, and you can visit owlsticks.com.
Are you telling me there is a Lord Kazoo?
There may be. I'm not 100% sure. When did he invent it? He was
1840,
born.
I think.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. It was a very successful family. His brother Augustus invented the ball sack.
You've been sitting on that one for a while?
No, okay. No, it just came up about 2 seconds ago. Okay. Hey, back off, kid.
All right. So we're moving along.
Wait, I think I can fix this.
No, don't rewind it. I want to live with this forever.
Oh, man.
Pete gone. Davidson is slowly but surely making his way back into the public eye. The Saturday Night Live cast member was seen taking a walk outside on Wednesday, keeping it low key in a matching Black Echo tracksuit. It's the first time... that he's been spotted since he and Ariana Grande broke up and called off their engagement. There's no word yet on who's keeping their $16 million New York City apartment.
It's not theirs.
It's hers. It's got to be hers.
I'll say this. I feel so bad because if you read any interviews with him, he was really trying to go in with the right mindset. But I think he still thought, wow, this is real.
Was the right mindset, this will be over someday?
And he was sort of joking about it, but like someday, not tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought he was at least expecting for half a year.
Yeah, well, here's what I think. You know, because the very first episode that they did of Saturday Night Live,
right,
after having an offer the summer, he did a little piece on Weekend Update.
We talked about it,
And we talked about it. We never went into detail about what we talked about or what he talked about. And he sort of basically joked that, yes, it's been great, but it's not going to last. I think that hurt her feelings, and that was the beginning of the end.
That can talk like that can, even though you realize when you feel like you're paying a compliment to this stunningly beautiful, out-of-your-league girl, it can actually be a bit of a turnoff.
I'm going to suggest that the real thing, that what really happened was Mac Miller's death, and that people were saying you were with Mac, who was a big mover and shaker in the world of music and hip hop.
Right.
And so they were looking at, and you're with this guy, you know, who's a second tier player on SNL. I don't know. But I think friends interceded, or she assessed what she thought she was attracted to in Mac Miller and felt that at that point Pete Davidson did not live up to it.
So I'm wondering, and I'm trying to find out while we're talking about it, if there's an SNL episode this weekend and if he's going to work at all. Because
there isn't. There actually is.
They're off?
It's a replay this week. Yeah,
okay.
It came up that Adam Driver and Kanye is going to be the playback this week.
Okay.
Okay. So anyhow, a source close to Davidson told E! News he's staying with the family in New York right now. The source provided some insight as to how the comedian is coping with the end of his engagement and who he's leaning on for support. An insider said Pete's doing fine. He has a strong support system of family and friends around him that are keeping him laughing. They added, while Pete's focusing on himself, he always wishes the best for Ari.
Ari.
Sharknado star Tara Reid is speaking out after reports claimed that she was removed from a Delta flight on Monday.
Of course you would expect her to be removed from a Delta flight.
Now, the 42-year-old left Delta Flight 613 with her dog in one arm, per footage obtained by TMZ. A spokesman for the airline told people that the plane was forced back to the gate due to a customer disturbance on board. Multiple reports claimed Reid complained about sitting in the aisle instead of the window and lack of leg room. But in a statement posted to Instagram, Reid fired back saying, "I was taking a flight to New York City to shoot a movie. I had prearranged flight plans to bring my 3-month-old puppy dog with me, which is my emotional support dog."
She
stated, "I had every right to bring my dog. I had a doctor and veterinarian, legitimate paperwork showing he could travel with me at the time of the flight in question, which I showed to the Delta flight crew persons."
Oh, all right.
She then made a reference to a French bulldog who died in March after a flight attendant put the dog in an overhead bin. She wrote, "The flight attendant wanted me to put my dog in its carry-on and in the overhead bin, which was an absurd request considering animals cannot breathe in there, let alone an incident which as such as this one, which took place some time ago, and that puppy unfortunately died in a very similar overhead bin. Therefore, I refuse to comply with this ridiculous request." I don't believe her.
Yeah.
I think that there was a company-wide mandate that...
Keep doing it.
Don't put... Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Keep putting them in there.
Yeah.
This is working for us.
Yeah.
We're getting great PR off this.
And there were multiple reports that said she had been complaining about sitting in the aisle instead of a window seat. So.
This is clearly... So she's in first class, it looks that way, right? And she's flying to New York. Was it to do a movie or to see a movie?
That's a good question. I think it was to do a movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't tell if she's sitting in first class or not, Steve. It looks like there's a middle row there, though.
She's one of these people that's, like, you know, super heavy coat, loads of bags. As they go down the aisle, they hit your elbow.
Yeah, she does.
My
dog. Reid says she switched to a different dog-friendly airline.
And what would that be?
Arrived safely to New York City as planned. It, she doesn't indicate, or at least it doesn't in this story.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the real story
is. Ah, hell.
In her new memoir, This Will Only Hurt a Little, Busy Phillips lets readers in on the good, the bad, and the ugly behind-the-scenes drama on Dawson's Creek.
Now, I watched Dawson's Creek, and they all seem to get along.
She joined the cast of the show in 2001, which was the fifth season, saying that it was clear from the start that there was an intense dynamic. She calls the show's star, Katie Holmes, very sweet, but adds, "We didn't spend much time together. I knew that she worked out a lot." Phillips said that she had a hard time really connecting with her, adding that she didn't seem to like to drink very much. And while I knew she would sneak a cigarette every once in a while, she wasn't really like a hangout and smoke kind of girl. And I think Busy was a bit of a partier.
That, very much so.
Yeah. Now,
she was the party girl on the creek.
The 39-year-old writes that stars Joshua Jackson and James Vanderbeek did not get along. And she opined that Joshua Jackson saw himself as a George Clooney type.
Did he?
But was a bit of a mansplainer.
Mansplainer.
I would think that's
right.
Mansplainer.
Mansplainer is someone who tells you all you need to know about Maine.
And she said...
Listen, Bar Harbor,
yeah.
Kid.
Great, yes. Great, yeah, restaurants and maple syrup, bar none.
But when you get in there, do not make a left. Go right. Everybody else goes left.
Stop mansplaining me.
So...
Don't get me started in Portland.
She said she could start...
Guy's a total Oregon splainer.
That he could turn a conversation into a dissertation. Phillips says that she was also often body shamed on set. She said wardrobe was really disheartening. The woman looked at my body skeptically.
Not a body.
I think the trick with you will be to just accentuate your chest and push up your boobs and maybe show your legs and then try to hide from here to here. She pointed to my boobs. and to right above my knees.
I didn't like your boobs. By the way, I talked to Josh. He knows everything about me.
Everything.
Do you remember? There's nothing. You can try to stomp on me. You can't. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
You're not. On a wardrobe perspective, you're difficult to find clothes for, but Joshua's just Mr. Mean. He knows everything. Total mansplainer. I didn't understand it, really, until I sat down with him. And then he splained Maine to me.
Lobsters.
And he was right.
Mm-hmm. So she added that they covered up her moles and compared her.
So she has pets.
Not the rodents. No.
We're going to put your guinea pigs here under a blanket if that's okay.
And compared her disparagingly to Holmes, who they said works so hard and, quote, loves running. So she said it was kind of interesting.
It just seems like normal dynamics, nothing explosive.
No.
She's selling a book, though, right?
Yeah, but it's nothing crazy over the top. Jamie Lee Curtis put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this latest installment in the Halloween franchise, and the actress says that she's got no regrets. Speaking with E.T. at the premiere of Halloween on Wednesday, the 59-year-old actress revealed exactly how
physical... Do you have any regrets? You were in the original E.T.
Entertainment Tonight. Not extraterrestrial. But
that's a scary movie. Michael Myers. The night he came home. I want to go home.
She actually revealed exactly how physical the role was and the toil it took on her body.
Did you work out?
She said it was hard. The whole thing was very hard. I ended up with a cracked rib at the end of it.
You take Activia, don't you?
She said I
how
was...
How are your bowel movements?
She said I was bruised and cut, but that's the nature of the beast. She said if you don't get hurt, you're not doing it right.
I watch the original. I watch it every Halloween, and there is a new 4K... remastering of it. Mm-hmm. So like a sucker, I buy every version of it. It's so damn good. And her character, I'm glad she's getting.
Yeah,
they're acting as if those other movies between one and two never took place, which is the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're following up and this relationship, this, and in fact, in the beginning of Halloween, the original movie, Laurie Strode is in class, and the teacher, though you're not quite paying attention, talking about fate, and fate is like water and the sun, and it's inevitable. And I like the fact that this story says it's leading to this. It's been leading forever to this ultimate confrontation.
When the very first Halloween movie hit theaters in October 1978, it was in a 19-year-old Curtis's film debut, and the film catapulted the actress into stardom as one of Hollywood's premier scream queens and cemented her career in show business. And now 40 years later on, she is once again taking on the role of heroine Laurie Strode for director David Gordon Green's take on the Michael Myers mythos for a sequel that sees Curtis in the role of the hunter, taking aim at the psychotic supernatural serial killer who has haunted her for decades. This is being billed as Laurie Strode's final confrontation with the famed slasher villain. And as you said, Steve, it ignores the multitude of sequels as well as Rob Zombie's poorly reviewed franchise reboot, and will essentially be a direct sequel to John Carpenter's 1978 original.
Which is the way it should be.
However, Curtis acknowledged the devoted fan base that has long supported and appreciated the franchise and shared her thanks for their continued support. She said, I can't explain why this genre touches people and makes them love it. There are rabid fans that have loved Michael Myers and Laurie Strode and the relationship between the two of them for a very long time. I don't understand it. I really don't. But I'm grateful to them because without them, I really wouldn't have a career, she says.
Well, the great sequence in the first one when you know, what is this guy? What is this serial? What is this lunatic? And then, you know, the whole talk about the boogeyman. And she says she finally comes to realization. He is the boogeyman. He's literally that.
Steve, were you talking about this movie or was it somebody else where it was... Originally, it was going to be set around Christmas or something like that.
And they didn't really know what holiday to fix it on. So Halloween was sort of a last-minute decision. And the town is named Haddonfield because John Carpenter's writing partner and girlfriend at the time was from New Jersey, was from Haddonfield.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Do you ever think they'll explain why they think this character is evil?
No. In fact, Loomis in the original movies, you remember, Preston, says, I spent years trying to get to him and reach him, and then I spent the next 7 years trying to keep him held captive because I realized he's just purely evil. Hmm. And that he was focused on that one night. It eventually led to that Halloween night where he returned home.
Okay.
It's so cool.
Samantha Markle is apologizing to Meghan Markle and Prince Harry for any past misunderstandings.
I'm really sorry.
The Duchess of Sussex's older sister is speaking out following the news that she's expecting her first child with the Duke of Sussex.
If you're Meghan Markle.
Unfortunately, I don't have any quotes, though.
This family, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
eventually, hopefully, they'll get bored and go away, but they're still in, I want to talk to Meghan mode.
They just need to shut up for years.
And this, by the way,
that's all that's going to
happen. Exactly. Exactly.
Apologizing is not going to help. Speaking out is certainly not going to help. You're just going to have to be patient.
This
that's
is her time.
You can do.
Yeah.
And they don't understand
They don't
that.
Get it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they had where it is.
Nothing to do with what she's going through right now.
Yeah. Yep.
But if she's over there when we're in London, come on.
Come on by.
I want to talk to you.
Yeah. Emma Watson was spotted on vacation with her new boyfriend, tech CEO Brendan Wallace. The pair haven't...
Are you boyfriend and girlfriend?
Wow, he got the exclusive. The pair haven't commented on the status of their relationship, but they were making out at a restaurant in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, according to witnesses. They kissed across the table and seemed passionate about each other. Source told E! News, or E.T., if you want to, that she had a big smile on her face.
A big smile.
And seemed to really love being with him. They chatted a lot and spent time laughing together. They seemed like a very happy couple enjoying their vacation.
So is there a guy she's been really linked with that's been a long-term boyfriend? She's not a tabloid sort of person, right?
No, not that
she
I
keeps
know
her.
She went to Harvard for a little bit, right? I think when she was in college in the States, she had a boyfriend here, and then or is it Brown?
Brown.
She knows Brown.
Mm-hmm. Carol Spinney has announced his retirement from Sesame Street, which he isn't. While he isn't a household name himself, he is the puppeteer behind Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch.
I was a huge Big Bird fan.
Yeah,
such a benign, lovable, warm character.
Mm-hmm. Spinney said, Big Bird brought me so many places, opened my mind, and nurtured my soul. And I plan to be an ambassador for Sesame Workshop for many years to come. After all, we are a family. But now it's time for two performers that I've worked with and respected and actually handpicked for the guardianship of Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch to take my alter egos into their hands and continue to give them life. He's 84 years old.
Oh, 84, wow. Preston. He was with the series and the characters right from the pilot episode, I believe, 1969. We have audio of him doing Big Bird for the first time and Oscar for the first time on that pilot episode, Sesame Street.
Hello, Big Bird.
Oh, hi, Gordon.
How are you?
Oh,
you know what I want you to do? I want you to meet Sally.
Oh, sure. Oh, hi, Sally. Where's Sally?
Wow, Gordon was on the very first episode, too. I thought he came along a little later on. Wow. Okay. And then this is him as Oscar in 1969.
Oscar, come on out.
What?
Come on out. Say hello to Sally.
Go away. Close my can lid, dear. They're letting all the fresh air and sunlight in. Boy, I hate that.
Well, you can hear how the voice changed a little bit over the years.
Yeah.
He was a little bit higher pitch in the beginning. But, I loved Oscar, too. He was great.
Who didn't love the Muppets
and
the whole approach of the show? Mind you, I already had three kids, and I was on my third marriage at the time that premiered. But, it was fanciful and sweet.
This is him talking about Oscar, I believe.
Yeah.
Here is a clip. Here we go.
I love playing Oscar. He has a power I never had.
Oh, I love trash.
He's totally different than Big Bird. I can't believe that Jim gave me two such characters that become iconic and are part of so many people in America that are growing up.
So he is retiring. He's been at it for a long time. So that's cool.
So the question has to be, over the decades, did he ever lose control or, piss the suit or...
piss the suit.
Did you ever piss Oscar or piss Big Bird?
Remember the big guy that carried Oscar around?
big what?
The big guy that carried Oscar around from time to time. Bruno. Yeah. So Bruno was also a Muppet, but he was a large Muppet.
Right.
Sometimes Oscar needed to go places, and so he needed transportation, and he would hire this guy to take him around.
Did
Sesame
he have the
Street.
Gigantic lower lip? That would.
Yeah.
I didn't know his name was Bruno. I love that character.
Yeah.
So in the Big Bird costume, how high did Carol's head go?
Well, didn't he have a stick that went above his head?
Is that it?
Yeah.
Because he appears to not be very tall.
Yeah. So I don't know how, Nick, because both his hands were working in the suit as well, so I don't know how he would hold the head up there and move it around.
He controlled Big Bird's mouth with his penis.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a ruin talent. Stuff.
Why do you ruin stuff?
He did.
That's why he did it for 80. That's yeah. For so long. He did it 84. They couldn't find anybody else to do it.
I spent all day getting off. I love it. Me? It's the best job ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he played Bruno.
Oh,
Carol! He carried around Oscar, and he played the guy carrying around Oscar.
So he was probably operating Oscar through. He would have to probably reach it, obviously, yep. Through Oscar's rectum or whatever it was in the garbage can. But
you're
so that's
ruining things again.
So it's one guy playing two characters at once.
Right.
Interesting. All right. What else do we have for? Did you guys see this, man? The new trailer for the movie Destroyer.
Yes.
No. With Nicole Kidman.
Uh-huh. You will not recognize her.
Oh, really?
Oh, she is. Wow. It looks intense.
Wait, is this the one where you were, Preston, on the set?
No.
Oh.
No, this is completely different. So we've got it on the monitor here rolling. Wait till they show close-ups of her face. You could, if we were to say, who is this?
Uh-huh.
You couldn't be able to. You wouldn't be able to pick her out. It just doesn't even look like her. Oh. And it looks like it's going to be a real awesome performance from her. The film, per the logline, follows the moral and existential odyssey of LAPD detective Aaron Bell, who, as a young cop, was placed undercover with a gang in the California desert with tragic results. When the leader of that gang reemerges many years later, she must work her way back through the remaining members and into her own history with them to finally reckon with the demons that destroy her past. The trailer shows her carrying a baby in a desert in one shot, searching for food and getting trigger happy. Anna Perina will release Destroyer in New York and L.A. on Christmas Day and expand nationally in January. It looks pretty wild.
Yeah, it looks like a real Christmassy type of movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
real
intense. Good.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be released nationally in January. Okay. So
it'll yeah, be after you the and the first couple shots of her, you cannot even tell it's her.
Yep, exactly. All right, we got clips.
Yeah, right here.
Okay, thank you, bro. Okay, this just handed to me. Superstore highlights the bond between employees of a megastore who tackle day-by-day challenges and crazed choppers. And here, America Ferrara mentions the relationship she has with her fellow cast members.
It's so easy to be with this cast and crew. I mean, you know, it's day one is always so exciting, and then 15 minutes later, it's like we never left. It's like, yep, here we are. We had a long, you know, a long weekend, and we're back at it. But it's always been so smooth with this cast and crew, and we were so lucky. We love working with each other.
What the f***?
New episode of Superstore airs tonight, 8 o'clock on NBC. Here's the next clip. Young Sheldon focuses on the individuality of the genius 9-year-old boy who skipped 4 grades and started high school in 1989. Here, Ian Artemidge explains how this type of uniqueness plays into the message of the show.
I think it's like saying that different people are okay, and you may be smart, you may be not smart, you may be whatever is different about you is okay, and you got to embrace that. No matter how hard it can be or how hard that person can be.
Shut the
f***
up!
Oh, my God, he's so cute.
I know. The show is really good. And the fact that they've really captured the essence of adult Sheldon is kind of a masterstroke.
New episode of Young Sheldon premieres tonight, 8:30, and that is on CBS. And that's the report for today, friends. We have this to do, Casey. We're supposed to do
you
it.
You want
to
do that?
Roughly okay. around all 7 right. a.m., I was told. We have a concert announcement. Prepare some appropriate music. This show is not until February. It'll be Monday, February 18th, but it is at the Wells Fargo Center, which is a big venue, obviously, and I'll give you the on-sale information. But MMR presents in concert Monday, February 18th, Disturbed.
Whoa! Hey!
That is correct. Disturbed. And not only that, but 3 Days Grace is going to be opening up the show. The general on sale tickets will be Friday, October 26th at 10 a.m. So that is next Friday via Wells Fargo Center, Philly.com. But guess what? There's a pre-sale, too. And that is going to be Tuesday. So next Tuesday at 10 a.m. through Thursday at 10 p.m. while the supplies last. And next week, we have a Word of the Week prize that focuses around Disturbed, and it'll be a trip or two to Vegas.
Woohoo!
Yeah, to see Disturbed and meet the band, and that'll be in January. So it'll be before this show here in Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo Center. So pre-sale password and complete details at WMMR.com. So once again, MMR presents Disturbed Monday, February 18th. That's President's Day, by the way, so you might have the day off.
Yeah!
At the Wells Fargo Center. Tickets on sale next Friday, but a pre-sale starts next Tuesday. Details at WMMR.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The Preston and Steve Show on 93.3 WMMR. Like the podcast, you'll also love it live. When you can call in. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. on the radio at 93.3 WMMR. Or stream the show live via MMR's mobile app.
All right, we got birthday bucks coming up at 8 o'clock. Casey Boyd tonight, Bud Light Philly Tour at Barnaby's in Westchester. Don't miss that, 7 to 9. We'll do some more passes. Before that event taking place will be the Cream of the Scream stop at Bates Motel. They're coming in this morning, actually, with Dunkin' Donuts. So we'll do some giveaways a little bit later. And I'm looking at our schedule for the day. We have a Not Your Average listener around 8 o'clock, 8:15, something like that. And then our friend Derek Pitts from the Franklin Institute is stopping by around 9 o'clock. This might be, I had something else I was going to talk about. We can still get to it. But if we are ever going to get the official update about Kathy's eyebrows, we have to do it now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's official.
We have guests the rest of the show.
Good call.
And
a lot of people may not be aware what was happening.
It was late in the program yesterday that we found out that Kathy was going for this super duper exclusive eyebrow treatment for this guy that came in town. Just her friend from New York City, from Long Island, was coming down specifically to meet this person to get their eyebrows done. And there were very specific rules. You can't be more than 5 minutes late or you're out of there. You can't bring anyone with you. Mm-mm. Can't take any pictures. Can't talk to anybody. All these little rules about this super duper exclusive. What is his name?
The Eyebrow King.
The Eyebrow King. He's you didn't say he was royalty.
No.
He's royalty.
The Eyebrow King.
Wow. Okay.
So there's no actual name or a...
His name is Nick Townsend.
Nick Townsend, the Eyebrow King.
Yeah. So, I walked in and he was a very nice guy, but it was very much... So my guess is why you can't bring anybody is it's just one room and he kind of had... So if somebody else were to come, like literally his whole shop is just one room.
You seem very uncomfortable.
Well, I like bounced in. I was like, hi, how are you? It's nice to meet you. And he was like, sit down in the chair.
You're a chipper little bird, aren't you? Why don't you sit in the chair and quiet down?
And it was no, like, usually, anytime I go to get my eyebrows done, I'm pretty specific. Like, I don't want them, please don't, you know, wax them too much. I don't want them thin. I don't want.
As you're talking to him,
yes.
He does what he sees.
Yes.
He's an artiste.
Yes.
He sees.
Whereas a sculptor looks at the block and whittles away to the art within, I see your brows and I will reduce them to perfection.
Yes, he visualizes the art within.
He said, sit in the chair. I sat in the chair. He goes, put your head back. And he started. And I was like, I don't,
Oh, you didn't get to tell him what you wanted.
Nothing. I didn't say anything. I did not say one word.
It would be better if you were to shut your mouth.
Uh-huh. And he did yell at me a little bit for, not yell at me, but.
Breathing.
No, he said, do you pluck your eyebrows? And I was like, well, not really. I'll just take like the hair strays. I'll pull them out. And he was like, don't do that.
Excuse me one second. Elaine, get this whore out of here.
No, there's no one else there. It's just him.
Really?
It's just him.
Do you?
And he goes, you're right-handed. And I was like, I am. I said, how can you tell? He goes, because your left eyebrow's nicer than your right one.
Oh, my God.
You yearn for the days of youth.
He had a 2/3 shot of getting it right, by the way.
But so no, listen.
Just as I thought.
No, Preston. Preston, though, he was actually correct because I complimented him because he made my eyebrows look the same. I had like two different shaped eyebrows because I guess because I'm able to do a better job on the lips.
Bigger.
is that the word though? Like whatever hand you are, because of the pectoral muscle.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay.
So I had he waxed my eyebrows, he shaped them, and then I had this vegetable dye put on the eyebrows. I left and I texted you guys. I said, I either look permanently angry or like Morticia Adams.
Okay, so here's the deal. It was supposed to make your eyebrows a little fuller. They're thinner than you want to be. I wish we would have seen you yesterday because I'll be honest with you, Kathy, looking at you, I don't see that big of a difference. That looks great.
I'll show you a side by side before and after. There's definitely 100% a difference, but from what I walked out there with
look
the dye on, it was ridiculous yesterday. I came home and Jay said to me, he goes, what's wrong with your face? He goes, are those fake?
Yeah. Are those fake? I wish I would have seen you then because it doesn't look that. I mean, this is somebody who sees you every single day.
Yeah.
I don't notice a big difference. Well, and I'm not saying it's not, money or anything like that.
I'll show you the before and after.
Yeah.
You'll see the difference.
If you were to do your own eyebrows.
Well, that's what I was doing.
I mean, if you were to what do you normally put in your eyebrows to darken them?
Like just like a little brown eyeshadow or whatever. You kind of pencil it in.
Looks like that.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. So now I don't have to do that. Sounds ridiculous, but you know what? I wanted
totally
to go.
Totally worth the money.
And I wanted to try it.
It was $60, right?
It was so
less people think that this pompousness came with a high price tag. It's not that bad, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. I don't know why your mic's off.
This is something that's lost on me, though. I don't know if it's for other women as much. I know you guys mentioned yesterday that a nice eyebrow on a lady will be something that sort of catches your eye. But to me, like, it's just I don't get it at all. And like, you know, going to get a pedicure or manicure or whatever, those things seem to make sense in my brain. This one, I don't see what the appeal is.
The majority of women have their eyebrows waxed.
Have them waxed?
Yeah, have them shaped and
contoured.
Waxed and taken care of. You groom them. I mean, I think there's very few women that just kind of let them go like a man would.
Yeah, I guess I just don't notice one way or the other.
I groom my eyebrows. I have to.
Do you? Yeah.
They get long. They get long and bushy.
You get the crazy old man eyebrow
thing
going. It's horrible.
I get like
you
a straight
like
one
Whitmore.
That hangs down. It's like, God, that's touching my ear.
Yeah.
No, but I need to.
I remember when we had milk delivered to the house.
Usually my hairstylist will shave my eyebrows for me. But I'm letting my hair grow out, so I haven't been to. So I actually had to shave my eyebrows the other day.
You shave them?
Yeah,
I do as well.
Well, I mean, I didn't really know what else to do.
What do you mean shave with what?
Like I have clippers, but like the clippers that I use to clip my beard. Yeah. But
there's a guard on it.
There's a guard on it, and that's so fine. Tell me. I mean, it doesn't look that bad, does it?
No, they look fine.
Mm-hmm. I have a little sharper because I have no eyebrows to begin with. I'm very matrix looking. So, but they do can grow out crazy man eyebrows. So there's a little sharper image tool that you sort of just move across your eyebrow and trim.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was
it also does nose hairs.
It was an experience for sure. And I think I have to see how long this lasts for me. If it lasts, I would go back. If it's gonna fade right away, I wouldn't go back.
Your name is Kathy, huh? You are in a loveless marriage.
What? He can tell read the eyebrows and tell everything about your personal life.
You shop often at Target, yes?
What? You're in my brain!
Marissa?
The eyebrows are the window to the brain.
Yeah. Marissa?
I just want you to know that I get the same thing done, and I know it's nice to get the one shaping, but if you don't want the outrageous appointments and price tag, I go to La Toile in Manayunk, and it is much cheaper for the same procedure.
Well, it's not the same, though. So I did look at the other salons, obviously. I didn't just go to this guy. Because
no, you're not going to throw caution to the wind. I get it.
And I understand because there are some other people in the city, too, that they'll call themselves like the brow whisperers. Like, I know you guys are laughing about
this,
but.
You have big, bushy eyebrows.
Well, wait, there's a calendar girl who has a whole business based on eyebrows.
The Gallo. I mean,
that's all she
does. What's that threading thing? I see that at the mall all the time.
Threading.
Right? Okay.
That's contouring as well. What they do is it's basically plucking the eyebrows using that thread.
How do they do that so fast?
I don't know. They're talented.
I don't know. We might have Ashley come in here and work on your brows, Steve.
Sure.
We're going to see if she does like a non-semi-permanent.
Right. I don't want to be Browenstein.
Yeah. I texted her yesterday, and per this conversation, she says that this guy, Nick, is in fact the king. However, she is the queen.
Uh-huh.
And we should address her as such.
Well, I would prefer to hang around the queen.
That's what I say,
yeah. Your Majesty.
So she might be coming in after our, okay. Speaking of the queen, after our trip to London.
Ah, very good. Okay, well, anyhow, I wanted to do an update on that before we got going because we have a lot of things to get to today and we have several guests on the program.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to cover that, but they look nice.
They do look nice.
I don't think they look $65 worth, but, you know, that's me. If it makes you happy.
Yes, it does. I actually looked in the mirror this morning and I was like, okay. All right. You after I showered and a little bit of the dye came out, I was like, all right.
Yeah. The last thing I want to do is feed the beast, but you always look great.
Listen,
and your eyebrows always look presentable.
I can't go. I can't do the Botox. I haven't been able to pull myself to do that yet. So
you don't want to inject toxins into your skull.
Well, just like a little, you know.
I tell you though, I've seen it in some cases where people have had. I think where it serves a purpose, and not to go off on a tangent here. If people have like a deep laugh crease or something that just drives them crazy, and they want to get rid of it, you can do that. If it's in an area where it will not deaden your ability to have facial expressions,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, though, when it's right in the hot spot, it looks weird.
You don't need it. You don't need it.
Nice. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. By the way, is it the fact that needles are jabbed into your face, or is it the toxin?
Toxin.
It's the toxin. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about a couple of words. Steve sent me over this story, and this is interesting. And if you ever have someone... maybe you're around regularly, that you feel needs a bit of a moniker, a negative title. But maybe jerk is too soft and a-hole is a bit too harsh.
Yeah. Oh, you have like a middle word?
You may choose either asshat or ass clown.
Okay.
But is there a difference between the two?
Well, this could not come at a better time because this is out now. Asshat has moved into the... it's relatively new in its use. I see it being used in a more in a liberal sense, and I think that there is a classification distinction that needs to be made between asshat and ass clown.
There are people that have been working on it.
Yes,
and I have the story here.
This is an actual debate.
Yes,
well, as to whether or not an asshat is an ass clown.
Not necessarily a debate, but a defining.
You would not want to wrongly call someone.
You wouldn't want to call an asshat an ass clown.
Here, I'll just say this at the beginning of this. I would rather be around an ass clown than an asshat, if I'm reading them correctly.
Okay, not me. I'd rather be around an asshat than
an ass clown.
Okay, so... we'll go into the details.
I've used ass clown before. I've never used ass hat.
No, to me, that doesn't roll off the tongue all
did
that
you
great.
Read the article, Preston?
I did.
Okay, and what are you preferring?
I like asshat better than ass.
Then I think I probably like asshat better than an ass clown.
Oh, well, wow. We'll see. So
based on the article, Preston?
Yeah.
Okay.
So here we go. These are these two terms, by the way, are among the 1,400 words, phrases, and meanings that were added to the Oxford English Dictionary. So this is why
it's legit
in the most recent quarterly revision. So this is why people have decided to actually go to some linguistic experts and ask them the difference. So
go to the ass section.
The most thorough record of the English language offers the exact same definition for both of these nouns, by the way. So Oxford's English Dictionary has the same definition for asshat and ass clown, which is a stupid or contemptible person.
That's an asshat?
No, that's both of them.
Okay.
That's the definition in the Oxford English Dictionary.
All right.
But there are subtle variations in behavior that distinguish an ass clown from an asshat. That's the question. Are there subtle variations? So, linguistics say yes. But first, some history on these words. So, asshat. Okay, let's start with that one.
All right.
Asshead has actually been with us as an insult since at least 1541.
1541, asshead has been an insult.
When English cleric Thomas Beacon had lamented how, quote, little pleasure have these assheads in hearing the glorious and blessed word of God. This is a cleric.
Right.
All right, so asshat, in contrast... So that was the first time we heard ass head, so, which is kind of a relative to both of these terms. So,
and the clergy was uttering that.
So ass hat, in contrast, dates only to the earliest days of the 21st century. The OED, the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah, you know me.
Identifies the January 4th, 2002 Usenet post, which said, "You're an ass hat, too," as the world's first known inscription in written English, making the news group, which is rec.sport.paintball, sort of like asshat's own Chauvet cave. which I assume was where cave paintings or English language or, you know, language comes from. So anyhow, that was the first. January 1st, 4th, 2002.
So relatively
Usenet
new.
Usenet post said, you're an asshat too. So, all right, so asshat crawled ashore and intermingled with the cultural lexicon, evolving into a casual but descriptive term of an unlikable person. In the world, in the word's official entry in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, lexicographers theorized that it could be a play on the phrase to have one's head up one's ass. An insult which, if pictured literally, would indeed result in that person's ass serving as sort of a hat.
I have used that guy has his head up his ass.
Of course.
Often.
Yes. So, however, the author concluded a more precise history will depend on the location of further attestations.
Okay.
Okay, now we move on to ass clown. Ass clown sprung fully formed from the brain, believe it or not, of writer and director Mike Judge.
No kidding.
He's the first person to come up with that and use the word, or at least use it. Okay, so the word's first documented appearance is in the film Office Space in 1999.
Ass clown.
Yes, and I don't have the exact quote of that.
Well, we'll see if we can hunt it down.
It's no talent ass clown.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, Michael Bolton. Yeah.
And there you go.
I'd never heard of it before, but I thought maybe it had been around in some parlance, and that's cool that Michael, because that's what I think of. I think of Mike Bolton talking about Michael Bolton being a no-talent ass clown.
See, so that actually speaks to what I think, which is what I thought, Preston, is that an ass clown would be someone, like he's just saying, he's calling him out for not being talented, but he's not saying he's intentionally malicious. Well, which I perceive an ass hat as being.
I'll give you the breakdown.
All right.
Okay, so an ass clown, wrote etymologist John Kelly in the blog Strong Language, is a pejorative pie thrown especially in the face of someone who wrongly thinks their actions are clever, funny, or worthwhile. Examples of persons named as ass clowns in the popular press include art vandals, anonymous, and selfie stick wielders. Those are ass clowns.
Okay.
Now, as with an ass hat, an ass clown's identity derives largely from the dissonance between the person's regard for himself and the regard in which others hold him. But how to draw a line between the two? So name developer and brand consultant Nancy Friedman, who has written about ass hats for Strong Language, says that of the two, an ass hat is more of an a-hole and less of a joker than his cousin, the ass clown.
Okay.
Others disagree, though, and I kind of see this one.
All right, let me have it.
This is according to linguist and lexicographer Ben Zimmer. He said, I see ass clown as an appropriate put down, not just for a run of the mill jerk, but someone who revels in the performance of being a jerk. That's why I don't like ass clown.
Okay.
He said, ass hat is a bit milder and not so performative. Kelly tells Quartz at Work that he considers ass hat an appropriate term for a person doing obnoxious things, while ass clown is the correct label for a fundamentally obnoxious person. A hat is something you wear. A clown is something you are. So I don't know. I think it's just, you know.
So they're actually closer in definition.
Yeah.
But you brought me around there at the end. That is salient logic.
Yeah.
That you are a clown, but you wear a hat.
Yeah. So he said hats can be taken on and off, at least in my mental imagery of the swears, while clown hits deeper at someone's behavior or being.
So you can shove your head up your ass.
Yeah.
But the idea of being a clown is something that you are.
It's innate to you.
Right.
Both terms derive their power from their associations with a-hole, a word of singular force in English. A-hole was first used to describe an unpleasant person during World War II. I didn't know that.
Like Hitler?
Explains Jeffrey Nunberg, I would imagine, yeah, a linguistics. Boy, that Hitler.
What an ass.
What an a-hole.
As Norm MacDonald says, I have no use for that guy.
Berkeley and the author of Ascent of the A-Word. I can't say that. We're not allowed to say a-hole, believe
it
or not.
Do you know we used to be able to?
I know.
We used to be able to. In fact, we were talking about
it. We can say butthole.
Yeah.
And we can say ass hat and ass head.
And ass clown.
But not a-hole.
Yeah, whatever.
Hiney hole.
From the beginning, it was an insult that punched up. U.S. soldiers used it to describe an officer who believes his status entitles him to a kind of behavior to either abuse his men or make him more important than he really is. So they used it as a term against jerk officers.
Yeah, jerk officers.
Jerk officers. Oh, my God. What a jerk officer.
We just coined another phrase.
We just created a new one.
Good job,
jerk
guys.
Jerk officer.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
Like, that's like a jerk off's boss.
Jerk
right?
officer.
Jerk
yeah.
officer.
Yeah.
Who oversees the jerk offs?
Officer. Wow. Okay. By the 1970s, the word had embedded itself into popular culture. It has carried the implicit accusation that the a-hole in question was abusing whatever power he, or less often she, held and failing to give others the basic respect and decency required by the social contract.
All right, let me ask you guys. Now, you hearing that separation and definition, give me who you think would constitute a pop culture person. You don't want to hurt somebody's feelings around here, but someone you would think would constitute an ass hat and an ass clown. Do you think you could, Preston, based on the delineation?
I think Roseanne Barr is an ass clown.
Okay.
If you want somebody in pop culture, it's the first person.
And then who's an ass hat?
Ooh, somebody who, who's an ass hat? That's a good question.
It's hard,
I would
isn't
say
it?
Wayne Brady's an ass hat, but he's an ass clown.
I think of him as an a-hole.
He's just
an a-hole. Yeah. Yeah. Straight up, thank you.
We're taking it a level up, right?
Well, here's the problem is you're dealing with nuance. As with your disdain of Roseanne, she may transcend. She may very well lapse into a-holishness.
How about somebody who so somebody who would do the stereotypical "Hey, hold my beer."
Yes,
that's an ass hat.
That's an ass hat.
Yeah, I think it's look at that ass hat over there.
Uh-huh. An ass clown is working hard or hardly working.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you would look for benchmarks or red flags to indicate, right?
Here's a question, though. And going back to the term a-hole, do you ever think of that as a use in a feminine, for women? I never think of
I have
women.
Heard women use a-hole really? For other women often.
Yes. She's an a-hole. I always think of it that's as like almost exclusively male. I'm not saying that I haven't ever used it, but it's almost reserved for
you should
a male a-hole.
A guy calling a woman an a-hole?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with that. But I've heard women call women a-holes.
Yeah,
okay.
I would agree with you. I think that it's like, you know, it kind of describes a man more. But I've definitely used it when there's a woman that's just really that she's not quite a C.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all the
right.
Way.
So
yeah,
but
is
like
you
almost
both turn the key at the same time and you're ready to launch the missile.
But like she's almost there. You don't want to use that terrible word, but she's like more than a bitch.
You worked
more than a bitch. More like a C to me.
You worked for an a-hole for a little bit.
I worked for a C.
You worked for a C? All right.
And I didn't work for her. Oh, let's just get something straight.
I know who you're
you worked
about.
With her. Uh-huh. There was a funny episode.
God, she was a C.
There's a
I
funny
wish I could say it. Sorry, Nick.
No. There's a funny line in a funny episode. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 1 second.
No, it's all right.
So here's what you do.
You want to give her.
Can you dump out if she calls her?
No, I'm not.
He knows who it is. Okay, Casey knows who it is.
You guys all know who it was. I apologize, Nick.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. But Kathy, that's interesting because I didn't think about that. So between bitch and C is a-hole.
Yeah, like that's
okay.
Really like that's like,
I like
there's
that.
There's a lot of meaning to that. Like there's really she is really just not a great person.
The application of a-hole for me seldom indicates someone who's inept or just goofy. It to me there's always there's a maliciousness behind them.
Yeah.
Like an a-hole is someone, why would you do that, you a-hole?
Right, right.
You know, why would you treat that person that guy's just being an a-hole? But I'd never say, this guy's dumb. He's such an a-hole.
Yeah. No, he's an ass clown.
He's an ass hat.
Right. What's funnier, ass clown or douche nozzle?
Douche nozzle's pretty good. Douche canoe is good, too.
I like douche canoe.
Yeah, somebody used that one time on the
I don't like either of those.
I'm not a big fan. I would probably go more on the ass hat, ass clown range. I think, Nick, to that question, I think douche a nozzle is almost trying too hard.
Oh, so you're sounding witty or attempting to sound witty by calling somebody a douche?
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve.
Yeah, the douche thing was used and overused.
Okay.
A bit.
My ass
but I did like douche canoe.
You did like douche canoe?
Yeah, I did like douche canoe.
Do you think the creators of douche canoe and douche nozzle were ass clowns?
Probably ass hats. It's hard to say.
Yeah. What was that episode of South really Park know. Where there was an election and it was between a giant turd and a douche nozzle or something? I think it was when Bush was running against Kerry, and in South Park they had a giant turd versus a douche nozzle.
In actual application of douche, is there a douche nozzle?
Well, the applicator,
right.
I would think, would be considered the nozzle right, of the right, douche right. thing, right? Right.
And the canoe is how you get to the store to buy it.
Maybe. Right.
If you live on an island
yeah.
and there's no other means to get into town.
Take the douche canoe.
Yeah.
Is Johnny Depp an asshat?
Ooh.
An asshat. So yeah. to me, if I mean correctly, you're attributing a level of maliciousness to it.
Yeah, right? That's why I'm asking.
I don't know. He's sort of, he's like nothing to me. He's just an actor.
How about this? This is a term I've used many times. Ass wipe.
Yeah.
Boy, what an ass wipe.
Yeah.
An ass wipe is is a dickhead.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range, yeah.
Dickhead.
Like, I would use ass wipe, but I wouldn't use dickhead.
Okay.
No. Well, an ass wipe is, yeah. Do you think of an ass wipe as more of a goof? Like, what an ass wipe. Or he's done something like, why did you double park across two spaces, you ass wipe?
Something like that.
Oh, it was a turd sandwich versus the giant douche.
That's what it was.
Sorry. Yeah, turd sandwich versus giant douche.
Let's get these
douche.
Things correct.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to read just a little bit more, and we'll let you debate amongst your friends this
it's
morning.
It's a personal decision.
But this is the last part of this article, and it says that, this is going back to A-hole. By the 1970s, the word had embedded itself in popular culture. It still carried the implicit accusation that the a-hole in question was abusing whatever power he or she held, and I'd mentioned this earlier, and failing to give others the basic respect and decency required by the social contract. An a-hole.
Ken Burns presents a-hole.
An a-hole or an ass clown or an ass hat is someone who doesn't care by reason of ignorance or malice.
My sweetest wife. Tomorrow we march into battle at the behest of the biggest ass hat I've ever served under. The level of this douche nozzle is incalculable. And I'm afraid many of the ass clowns I serve with will be killed during battle.
A new documentary by Ken Burns.
And I will proudly stand shoulder to shoulder with the dickheads that surround me.
As they're zooming. So instead of you're doing the zoom, but it's into their butts.
Right.
on the bleached out photographs.
So anyhow, this says this person, the a-hole, doesn't care by reason of ignorance or malice if his conduct demeans or offends another. It is about having a skewed relationship to entitlement, something that can become glaringly apparent in the confines of the workplace. They're saying most of these people you work with.
Okay.
It's so funny, though. I don't – listen, we've talked about this. We live in a very – our work situation here is really good. We are not – and certainly Preston, we have worked in places where there was they were on tap.
Yeah.
The ass
devil people.
Yeah. Here's the deal. I think we all probably have those characteristics, so I'm going to open this up. What am I? Am I an asshat? Am I an ass clown? I hope I'm not an a-hole.
No.
You're not.
No, I think
that the most benign but potentially annoying, and I don't say you're annoying, but mm-hmm. I think that's what you're asking, if, like, in your endeavor to be humorous or...
Ass clown?
Ass clown.
I would say ass clown.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to go to the text message board or put up a poll and say, okay, what am I?
I think the most benevolent version of that would be you.
Yeah.
You're good-natured, and just by happenstance, you end up maybe annoying some
people.
Let's
do that, because you don't take anything personal at all.
Never. Never. Listen. Come on. Listen.
You're being an asshat. Yeah.
Just depends on the day.
We don't want to put that up. I don't want to put you through that.
Well, I'm not going to look at the results.
Yes, you will.
I don't feel like crying today.
It says here, basically, in summary, you should use whichever term feels most satisfying in its utterance, safe in the knowledge that when historians unearth your furious tweets and texts and office chat DM centuries from now, that the dictionary will be able to tell them exactly what you meant. So there you go. It's ass hat.
Interesting.
An ass clown. We have people that are calling in that love ass monkey, and they say there's ass hattery involved as well.
So okay.
Thank you very much. We do appreciate it. But it's worth a discussion today.
Surrounded by a-holes.
That's right. Wait. Oh. Wait. Spaceballs.
Sorry.
Yep. That's okay. All right. We need to take a break, but not before we give something away, because we have lots of stuff. I'm going to hang on to those.
Hang on to those. You know what, Preston?
What you got?
I've got all of these things. I would like to give you this.
All right, and I have beer from our friends at Yards. It's Rival IPA. We'll talk, take call number 20. You have to be this 21 to win. 215-263-WMMR. And on the 21st, the Birds host Carolina. Be sure that you have plenty of Yards Rival IPA on hand. You can look for Rival's old school Kelly Green packaging with throwback pictures on the bottle. And you can pick some up at, for Pete's sake, South Front Street in Queen Village. 215-263-WMMR, the number. We'll break and we'll be right back. Make sure you stay with us.
MMR's Birthday Bucks, Part 2.
Proving you can have your cake and eat it, too.
Are congratulations in order to you?
They are, indeed. Just won $1,000.
What are you going to do with that dough, by the way?
I'm going to spend it. What else?
That's the spirit, girl.
You're our $1,000 winner.
Woo!
I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah, not as much as I love it.
It's your shot to win $1,000 cash 5 times a day, each weekday. Tune in at 8 a.m. and 11 a.m., as well as 1, 4, and 6 p.m. when we announce that hour's winning keyword. Enter it via the newly revamped MMR app on your fancy thinking phone or at WMMR.com. You've got until 15 minutes after the hour to get in. One random entry will be picked to win $1,000. MMR's Birthday Bucks Part 2. 5 times every weekday at 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m., and 6 p.m.
Sponsored by Sprouts Farmers Market. Now open in Broad and Washington.
Complete contest rules available at WMMR.com.
All right, thank you, Kathy.
We're watching Preston roller skate. We have a whole bunch of construction going on here, and so yesterday we suggested, you know, we should do something because we have to, this whole open area before they start dividing it up.
Yeah, they've demolished the area and they've cleared it out. So
and you brought your skates
just,
in.
It's all just concrete.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I brought my roller skates in, and I went next door, and yeah, there's enough room to roll around in there. You'll notice in this video, I'm being very cautious.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of gaps in the floor, and there's a lot of debris, little just you know pieces of sheetrock and stuff like that. And if you hit one, you're going down.
Which you did,
and I did, and you can see.
Did you go down?
Yeah, see the white stains on my knees. That's from I fell.
Really?
But yeah, dude, I love roller skating. It is so much fun. And here's me trying to shuffle a little bit, which is kind of like dancing while you're skating. So it's totally, man. So nah, I'd be Rapper's Delight.
Rapper's
that's what
Delight.
I'd be skating too, yeah.
So this smaller area, I think the area that's on where our actual business offices used to be would probably be bigger because this looks big, but that area on the other side of our studio is going to be bigger.
I'll go try that out.
Yeah.
Yep.
I went roller skating for a birthday party Jace was invited to last winter.
You can do it. You're good?
It was not like riding a bike. I did not put them on and do the same. I used to be like such a good roller skater when I was a kid. I used to enter like the racing competitions. I'd always win. Oh, man. I was like, okay, how am I going to do this, not fall and look like an idiot and help Jace?
Where'd you go?
You know, it's a place in the Northeast. I forget the name of it. Northeast Philly.
Yeah, yeah. It's right off the boulevard.
Yeah, right off the boulevard. Yep.
Yeah, there's one Preston up by you, too, up on 309.
Yeah, it's 309 Skate.
Is that what it's called? I went to a birthday party there a few years ago, and I was never good in elementary and middle school, and then got back on the skates, and I was reminded pleasantly of how bad I actually was.
For a while, we were going to this place. I forgot. It's near where Del Toyota is, and it's it was called Callen Skate Center. And it was still, it had a wood floor, which
cool.
I prefer. A lot of them are going to this, like, plastic tile.
Oh,
you
don't
like
really?
It? And that's more for, you know, playing inline hockey. And for the quads, which I skate on, you need that wood floor, man, because it just, you know, it's nice and smooth and flat, and it's an even surface, and I love it. But and apparently, Callen Skating Center, they put down the tile. And
okay,
I don't really care.
We talked about doing a show party one time.
Yeah,
I don't know if that
honestly,
ever happened.
Yeah. And if somebody, I would love to. I've tried. I have not tried the quads though.
Yeah,
I was a kid. So the inline skates are what I tried.
Yeah.
And I look like Herman Munster on acid.
Well, and listen, the bigger you are, the older you are, the harder you go down when you fall.
Big time. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, if I don't know if we'll end up posting this video, but this is me taking my dear sweet time. I can go a lot faster and get a lot more, a little more movement into my skin.
What's your number one performance song when you're skating?
Oh, Rapper's
it's Rapper's Delight,
man.
Wins hands
For
down.
Sure.
All right.
That's the first rap music I ever heard, and I heard it at the skating rink, and I'm like, hey, they're like just talking through this whole song.
Yeah,
but and the bass groove is, you know, It's so awesome.
Yeah,
you can't, you know. But anyway.
Can you get down on the with the bent knee with your foot out in front of you?
Shoot the duck?
Shoot the duck.
I can't do that anymore.
Okay, all right.
The old knees won't allow that anymore.
You shot the duck.
I shot. The duck is dead, dude.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was so much fun.
I would tell you what, just from going over there for 5 minutes, my calves and shins are tired as hell because I haven't gone in a long time.
Local broadcaster Preston Elliott admitted on air today that he is now a quadriplegic.
We could have a show race.
Nick, the Palace is the place you're talking
about. That's the Northeast one.
Oh, the Northeast one. Yeah, that's where we went. Mm-hmm.
Kathy,
yeah.
You and I should do a comparison video, see how Preston does and looks graceful, and then you and I getting over there and looking terrible.
Bring in your skates.
Yeah.
I don't have skates
Well,
anymore.
I thought of everything. I brought a push broom with me to car to clear off the area. Do you think interns of mine going over and sweeping?
No, that's what interns are for.
No, listen, honestly, and then check out over on the other side.
I will.
Here's the deal. We've got to do.
Next commercial break, I'll go check that out.
And we've got to do some sort of event, because they're going to start construction soon.
Yeah.
Take advantage of that.
All right, I'll go over there next. Hey, people are waiting for the bizarre file.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that.
Now, WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right, and it's brought to you by Delilah's. Delilah's presents Trick or Treat, the 27th anniversary party on Wednesday, October 24th, with guest DJ Cat Nova. And you can visit Delilah's.com for details. Well, it's still not clear why a man in a motorized wheelchair rode the up escalator at the Columbia Heights Metro station before falling down the moving staircase and dying.
Whoa!
So he had a motorized wheelchair that he's trying to take up
you
the
can't
escalator.
Do that.
And those things are heavy.
They are.
Surveillance video showed the man pressing the up button for the underground station level elevator at about 1:30 in the afternoon. A review of camera footage revealed the man waited only for about 10 or 15 seconds for the elevator, and then he diverted to the escalator. Upon reaching the top of the escalator, the man and wheelchair, he was all the way at the top, fell backward, rolled all the way down to the bottom, and it killed him. The escalator.
So this is the second dude you had yesterday, a story of a guy's shirt getting caught in the escalator.
That's correct. The escalator then dragged the man from the bottom a short distance up and then shut off, sending him back to the bottom again. The man was unconscious when first responders arrived. He was taken to the hospital where he died, and they have not released the man's name pending notification of next of kin. That's horrible, man. A family is shocked and upset after their son came home and told them about a bizarre incident at his high school. And he told them that 2 weeks ago, another Da Vinci Charter Academy high school student brought cookies to school baked with human ashes in them and was passing them around.
This is true.
So according to a student... they said this girl is going around telling everyone basically at this point that she had brought in these cookies to school with human ashes in them. Police confirmed that the boy's story was not just a wild rumor, and after investigating, they believe the story is credible. The sugar cookies allegedly contained the student's grandfather's ashes
Good
in
Lord.
Them.
And you know the grandfather's name was Bert Sugar Johnson.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The irony. One student baked the sugar cookies using the ashes while the other passed them out. Police say they know of 9 students who ate the cookies,
some of who
knew what was alleged to be in them and others who didn't.
Well, listen, I think both you and I, Casey, got a mouthful of dead guy.
No, I did. That was not me.
Okay.
Luckily, I was still here in the studio.
All right, because when we did a wood chipper thing and somebody brought the ashes of a family member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when the ashes blew all out all over us.
The boy's family did agree to speak to a TV station on the condition that their identities be hidden for fear of repercussions from the school district. The boy's mother said it blew my mind. I was really repulsed, and I was upset that I wasn't even notified. What the boy's parents were most upset about, however, was the way they said the school handled the incident. The student's mother says school administrators questioned her son, fearing he may have eaten one of the cookies. Her son says after being questioned, he was asked to submit a statement about what had happened and sign it. That student's mother said that she met with the principal, Tyler Millsap, and demanded a copy of the statement her son was asked to sign. She said the district seems to be a little bit more concerned about protecting themselves than protecting their students. So they are looking into...
Why don't you calm down, wow. Come into my office. Hey, why have one of those chocolate balls?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Hey, listen to this, man. A North Carolina man who booby-trapped his back door with a shotgun shot himself when he opened the door.
Whoa.
The 68-year-old man seriously injured himself with his own booby trap at about 11:30 a.m. Deputy said the shotgun went off after the man opened the door to feed some squirrels, hitting him in the arm.
He forgot about it?
Yeah, I guess so.
And, he's like, no, you idiot!
And arriving, yeah, it's right out of Looney Tunes. An arriving deputy used a tactical tourniquet on the man. Authorities say that the trap was just one of many that had been rigged around this guy's property.
So is this sort of a makeshift security system?
I think that's what it was. Deputy said that the man was taken to the hospital. I don't know anything
about... I forgot that I feed the squirrels.
...about his condition. And this is the second day I've had squirrel stories, too.
Yes.
A woman who was left paralyzed after being catapulted from her super king bed during sex is suing the bed suppliers for $1.3 million. Claire Busby suffered a serious spinal injury after she fell from her supersized king double divan while changing positions. The 46-year-old was kneeling in the middle of the bed performing a sex act on her partner when she decided to change positions.
Hmm.
Busby told the High Court in the UK that this is when the bed gave way and she fell off and landed on her head.
So the bed broke. It wasn't just a case of her bouncing off a bed.
Correct. She said, I spun around, I put my hand down, and then it felt like I was catapulted off the back of the bed.
Wait a second. I'm going to change position.
She said, my head hit the floor. I fell to the side, and then I heard like a spring in my body snap. She said it felt like. The mom of four claims that the bed was in a defective state and she has taken legal action against Beds R Us, the store that supplied the mattress. The supplier denies any liability for Busby's injuries and is arguing that the bed was properly assembled, but she has a lawsuit pending against them. And we'll do one more story and wrap it up. Yeah, here's a good one. A fugitive in western Pennsylvania was no match for a four-year-old. Sheriff's deputies were searching for 24-year-old Jesse Vaughn Lawson last week on an arrest warrant for burglary and receiving stolen property. While checking at an apartment, Lawson's girlfriend told him that she hadn't seen Lawson in 5 days.
Oh, okay.
But the woman's four-year-old son was more than happy to help. The boy told deputies, come on, I'll show you. And led them to an electrical closet where he was hiding.
That's great.
Oh. I'll show you. Come on.
The innocence of the kid.
Lawson faces additional charges of flight to avoid apprehension, child endangerment, and drug offenses. So he has been arrested.
He does science experiments in the basement. Follow me. I'll show you.
And that is what I have in the bizarre file for you this morning. Our friends from Dunkin' Donuts are here this morning, and they brought a special group of donuts for our Cream of the Scream event.
They're awesome.
At the Bates Motel. Yeah. They say Preston and Steve on them.
Yeah.
The Scream. It's really, really cool. And you can come join Steve, Marissa, and Nick tonight at the Bates Motel. Tickets are available at thebatesmotel.com. I'll give away two pairs of passes right now.
It's going to be a great time, so please come down.
Our first two callers, 215-263-WMMR. If you win the tickets, it's from 6 to 8. That's the appearance. If you want to come by and see the gang tonight, you can do that. Get there early because everybody starts to head out on the haunted attractions, and there are a lot of great ones there, man. The best in the country.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, what they do and the way they keep expanding and upping the ante every year will blow you away.
So give us a call right now, and we'll set you up that. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we have a Not Your Average Listener this morning.
I love this.
We're going to hear the story. They're always great, and we'll find out if you think that this person deserves a cash reward or not. We'll get to that, and our friend Derek Pitts from the Franklin Institute in this morning as well. We'll be right back.
Become an MMR VIP. Get early access to concert pre-sales, special deals, and VIP-only contests. You'll get our newsletter about twice a month, most of which you'll find worthwhile. Sign up now at WMMR.com.
Before we get to our next segment, three quick shout-outs, if you don't mind.
All right.
In case you gave me this one, Chris Melanchuk.
Yes.
Is this from Chris?
This is from Chris, yes.
It says, hey, Casey. It was sent to Casey. All my boys and I work from MBI Pipelining, live in Wisconsin, and I got them to listen to your show, and they freaking love it.
Oh.
They have been out here living for 2 years, and I was wondering if they could get an old-school shout-out. That's MBI Pipelining. Love you, kid. Cute dog, by the way, Casey. All right, so here you go. That's for Mr. Chris Melanchuk. Thank you, man.
So they're all listening.
Here's another one from Kelly Taylor. I know Kelly. She says, hey, I'd like to send a shout out to Matt Hendricks on the opening of Thirsty Dice, a board game cafe. And I think it's opening today.
Now you're talking my language.
You hate board games. Not many of us get to turn our favorite pastime into a career, but you've done it. Fairmount is getting a great new hotspot, so I'm happy that the time has finally arrived. Game on. So here's a shout-out to Matt Hendricks and Thirsty Dice in Fairmount. And then one more. Listen to this one. It says, oh, Preston, I'm a terrible granddaughter. I am so late on this. For the past 2 years, I've asked for a shout-out for my gum-gum. And then she goes, I so wish I actually called her that. starting when she turned 100 this year, October 4th, she turned 102.
Holy hell.
So I just got this yesterday, by the
way. Time is of the essence.
So she's late on this. She says, please give her a shout out when you get a chance. Her name is Helen Koenig. She celebrates these 102 years with 3 sons, 6 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. Thanks, Presbo. I love you. And that's from Melanie Koenig. So here's
Casey,
a shout out.
You want to crank up a real deal one?
Yeah, you want a real deal one? I can hook you
100
up.
100 plus.
102 okay. years old. Yeah, we need right. We need a big one there. Ah, hell, I got one more.
Really?
Yeah, well, right. I need to do this because it's today and it's really special.
Hell.
This is from Chris Garvey. Says, hey, I was hoping to get a shout out for my son, Colin. I am scheduled to receive a stem cell transplant October 18th out at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. So that's today.
That's a big one, too.
Not only is Colin my donor, he will also be my caregiver for the 3 to 4 months that I'll be staying down in Baltimore away from our home in Havertown. All 3 of my kids agreed to get tested without hesitation. I'm so proud of all 3. And Colin was determined to be the best, to be the best match, and has put his life on hold for a little while to give his forever grateful dad a chance at a cure. Of course, he's been holding it over my head when I ask him to take out the garbage or walk the dogs. He reminds me that his, quote, stem cells just might not be feeling it today. Anyway, a shout out to Colin would be greatly appreciated. On or around the 18th would be great, but we will be podcasting the show, so anytime would be awesome. So here you go,
that's
man.
That's another big one, Case, I think.
That's for Colin. Yeah. Hit it all one right. more time, please. Yeah. I'm going to do my best to catch up on the...
I mean, that stem cell.
I understand.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best to catch up on the shards that I've been...
have you been delinquent?
That I've been holding in.
You're holding in.
Yeah,
wrong.
I can't.
Don't
it's not
that.
Healthy
May
to do
I
that,
at so. Least speak on your behalf? You are currently a competitive skater. So that's why your time has been...
I've been training.
You've been training, and you have not had the time to devote to that.
Exactly. All right. And now, a musical interlude.
Preston and Steve.
Adam, Preston and Steve.
Listen every day.
Listen every day.
I listen to WMMR 93.3. I don't think that there are.
I don't think that there are.
Many people like me.
Many people like me.
And if you agree with me, text yes to 39333. Primo Hoagies totally promised to pay every one of you. 250.
250.
It's not just a hoagie.
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 It's a Primo!
That's beautiful, man.
Casey.
Yeah.
And the lovely Kim, our singing telegram singer, who's amazing.
I love
her.
Just
saw her again at an event. She comes out and supports the show. She's got a beautiful voice, super talented.
She was at the Bitch Box, wasn't she?
I think she was there as well. And she comes out to a lot of stuff.
And she helped me create the Harry Balsack song, which is wonderful.
She's so good.
She's the best. We would like to introduce a Not Your Average listener, and we will find out if you do agree to that title and win the two. Actually, see if this person can win $250 cash from our friends at Primo Hoagies, our latest sponsor. I'm going to tell you just a tiny bit about her, and then we're going to find out the rest from the gal herself. And she says, I guess I'm not your average listener because of Twisted Philly, my podcast, dedicated to telling stories about true crime, haunted history, and creepy places to visit.
This is us.
I'm in.
This is what we live for, yeah.
And it's everything I love about Philadelphia, she says. So I'll leave the rest of it to her. This is Dina Marie.
Hey!
Good morning, Dina.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me here.
Our pleasure. How long have you been at this podcast? Because you just recently reached a milestone, and I will share that with everyone in a moment.
I did. I've been doing this for just about 2 years.
Okay, 2 years, and you recently, last month, have gotten to your 1 millionth download, correct?
I did.
Wow, that is a successful podcast.
No, that's awesome.
Thank you very much.
And it is also unique in the fact that there are other a number of other podcasts that deal with similar things. But the fact that you're to find an audience and to have an audience to help you get to that number in that short amount of time is really good. And I think, you know, so you focus in on this area here.
I do. I stick to Philly, the surrounding areas outside of Philly. We go a little bit further up the turnpike to other parts of Pennsylvania. And it's a real mixed bag. So as Preston said, it's true crime, history, tourism, legends, lore, really just trying to give folks an idea of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the unexpected where we live.
There's been all, you know, we've throughout the years, we talk about stuff like this all the time because we love it. And I think what happens is probably the people who listen to your podcast rely on you to curate these things. So if it's exciting you, it's what they find interesting. What are you drawn towards the most of all of these eclectic subjects? Are you the paranormal, the true crime? What really floats your boat?
History.
History.
Yes, which is not necessarily the most exciting for everyone.
Yeah.
But I have a big love of American history, especially American history here in Philadelphia and parts of Pennsylvania. So that was really what the start was.
Okay. And with that, does it tend to lean towards the more offbeat, odd?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Because there's so much.
There's
so
loads of stories. Yeah. And I'll bring one up that intrigues me. And I love this type of stuff, Steve. And you, Dina, will know because I've forgotten the guy's name. The cave not too far from where you lived in Manayunk, Steve.
Oh, yeah. The Copious.
Yes. Yeah. Where and it was a cult that had a very loyal following. And it was just... I read the story and I'm like, this is outrageously awesome.
It's wild. And also, and that was happening well before the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. Long before, in the late 1600s. And he was a very young man when he came here to Philadelphia. He was 22 years old when he got stuck leading this cult.
Yeah.
Because the cult leader died. And it's a little unfair to call it a cult, but that's what we call it.
A religious yeah, sect, so to speak. And so, did they come from Germany?
He was from Germany. It's considered the oldest cult in America.
Isn't that wild?
I love calling out the firsts that we have in Philly. Okay. Some of them are a bit bizarre.
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay. Do you have any others that come to mind?
We had the first Society for the Association of Spiritualism that launched in 1852. And we have probably one of the earliest guidebooks for brothels. So there's
a guidebook.
Yes, there is a guidebook to
Victorian brothels. We know it as Fodor's. No,
that was written back in the early to mid 1800s.
So is this like etiquette and how the business should be run?
Well, it starts out like as a warning for young men who are visiting the city of Philadelphia to avoid them.
Oh.
Yet, once you get through that warning, it is a review of every brothel in Philly.
Oh my God.
Which ones have the loveliest ladies with the most pleasant demeanors? Which ones have ladies that might be a bit rougher, some of the neighborhoods that you might want to avoid, regardless of how nice the brothels are. So,
so it starts off cautionary, but is in essence becomes a guide to quality.
Yes, absolutely.
That's funny.
When did brothels become a thing of the past in Philadelphia? And I'm not talking streetwalkers. I'm talking like a place you can go to. And it's known that this is what they do.
It was sometime in the late 1800s.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Wow. There are lots of firsts, and you hear about them, and some of them I'm always kind of like, that doesn't sound like that's real. besides the first, how about things along the lines of secret societies and so forth in and around this area? Because there's got to be many throughout history.
So I haven't delved into that too much yet.
Yeah.
But that's a great topic idea. So thank you for
that. Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a background in history? Did you go to school for...
I did not. I enjoy early American history. I love this city. And, you know, it's not all the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall.
You're so right. One of our favorite things to do that we used to do and take listeners on was a haunted walking tour of Philadelphia.
Right.
Whether you believe or not, the paranormal union with actual historical characters and people from our past was always a fascinating angle to come in at it, you know?
Yeah. With your looking into and researching these topics that you're going to go to, is it mainly sifting through online records, going to libraries, finding things, or do you try to track down people and get the story that maybe people haven't heard yet?
It's a combination of everything you mentioned, Preston. It really depends on the topic.
Yeah.
So, for example, when I put together the episodes about MOVE, so the bombing that happened in 1985, there were so many books, so many films, and I really wanted to go back to when everything started in the early 70s, not just what happened in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, I mean, obviously there's a wealth of information and there's also a wealth of misinformation. And you've got to be adroit and adept at discerning which is which. Have you always been sort of analytical, or what skill set, where did you learn your skill set to bring into this?
It's not entirely analytical. So a huge piece of it is analytical and fact-based research.
Right.
But I also editorialize a little bit.
Okay.
It's not easy for me to hold back my passion and my personal feelings about the stories that I'm telling.
All right.
Okay. There's a saying that, you know, you mentioned the MOVE, that whole subject. There's a saying that be careful when you go digging up the past because all you get is dirty. Have you ever run into resistance among people or like you should not ask these type of questions?
I got a lot of heat when I released an episode about the Mummers.
Really?
Yes. So
that's surprising.
On New Year's Day, I did an episode about the Mummers because they have a history rooted in racism.
Okay.
And a lot of folks don't realize the song that is very representative of the Mummers, that we all do the Mummer strut to, is an old minstrel song that is a derivative of a slave song.
Okay.
And with our history of, sadly, racism among the Mummers, now, not today, certainly, but...
Sure. It's a beloved thing now.
I got a lot of nasty email from people over that one.
Mummers?
The city loves the Mummers.
Yeah.
And I do too.
Listen, there are pasts that have changed from different things. It's now beloved, and it's a different iteration. Jackie Bam Bam here at the station is an active
people get defensive, though.
People
just get, like, if you besmirch their organization at all, it doesn't matter when it happened, they're going to get defensive of that organization.
Yeah, and certainly organizations can change over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe they had a certain origin. And
they have. And that was also a big part of the episode as well, in talking about the good work that's done by so many of the groups and the Mummers. But for me, I can't tell a story about Philly without getting to the dirt and the grit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what's underneath.
What you're doing is predicated on. So we get that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So speaking of dirt and grit, something that we've had fun with over the years is Frank Rizzo and him going after. So I want to know about mining that particular area and history of Philadelphia, because there's a lot of story to be told when it comes to Frank Rizzo.
So there was a lot of coverage about Rizzo in the episodes about MOVE. From what I researched, the city of Philadelphia was actually going through a federal investigation because of police brutality under Rizzo's administration. I have a larger episode on Rizzo that I've been working on. You know, some things take a couple of weeks to develop and other stories take months because there's just so much information.
Yeah.
There's more to come on Rizzo.
When you do, for example, I'm drawn to the more, you know, like the Heidnik, you know, those. Mm-hmm. You know, like the serial killer, those bizarre characters. Who was the guy who had the death house here?
I remember we had our friend from NBC 10 coming by to talk about that. He didn't have it here.
Right. Okay.
He was in Chicago, I think.
H.H. Holmes.
That's it. Yes.
H.H. Holmes. So I have an episode about Heidnik. I have an episode about H.H.
Holmes.
He's buried
here.
He was captured here and caught here because of an insurance scam he was running in Philadelphia.
Right.
And he was doing it with a partner and felt, I guess I could probably make even more money if I got rid of this partner. So he burned him to death. And eventually it led back to Holmes. He was arrested and incarcerated in the old Moyamensing prison and was hanged. So there's an Acme in South Philly, the Moyamensing area. That's where the prison actually stood.
Okay. Where the Acme is.
The only thing that's left of that prison is this very small stone wall that borders the edge of the Acme parking lot.
Okay. That's pretty wild.
That's where he was hanged.
So he had this. So this house was not here, but it was basically a house of horrors where there was a poisonous gas would leak into rooms and kill people in their sleep. And I mean, there were passageways between the walls where he was going, and it was just an astonishingly evil guy.
He was absolutely demented.
Yeah.
And I love the details of, okay, so that stone wall boarding, was part of a prison. I love hearing stuff about that. Outside of the, how about let's get into some of the supernatural stuff and stories that are, with the history of the city and for how long it's been around, there are loads of stories about that. What are ones that stand out in
your
mind?
There are, and I love telling ghost stories. There's hauntings on Alfred's Alley. So in the little courtyard behind the main alley, there's rumors that a Revolutionary War soldier was hanged back there. And so the ghost of the soldier haunts Alfred's Alley. Eastern State Penitentiary is filled with fantastic ghost stories. And, you know, obviously this time of year, Terror Behind the Walls is such a big deal there. Mm-hmm. But if you've never done the audio tour, it's a self-guided walking tour through the entire penitentiary. It's just phenomenal.
We've actually hosted by Steve Buscemi, by the way.
Yes.
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
I've done it.
Oh, yeah. It's fabulous.
We actually slept over in the penitentiary a couple of times. Yeah. Years ago, we had listeners come with us and we did haunted investigations in the penitentiary. It was effing wild.
Yeah.
And whether you believe or not, it's just creepy. Exciting. And it's just creepy and weird. But there were some things that happened while we were there that were, you know.
What was that?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there was one where we were up and there was not a death row, but there was a holding area for a death row that was another prison where people would be sent to. And so in that area, we went up and used one of these voice-activated recorders. We were up there, Preston. You were there.
Yeah.
And as God is my witness, I'm not making this up. I'm not professing to believe in it or whatever, right. Whatever you believe.
Yep.
But the questions were asked. We were in the room. And what happens is this recorder reacts to sound. So someone asks a question, pauses, and then continues. So if you play it back and there's no response, it's question after question after question after question because it's just activating with the voice.
It will pause. It will only activate once it hears a voice to trigger the activation.
So at one point, the man conducting the investigation says, "Do you want us here? You know, do you want us here?" And on the playback, you hear with the room reverb, the plate reverb in the room. No.
Yeah.
No. And we were there. I mean, I was standing right there. So they were very meticulous when a car would pass in the distance, like he'd say car or anything, just to make sure that he was tagging sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But this was not. We were in the room, and this voice was hearable on the playback.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. If you're just tuning in, it's Not Your Average Listener, Dina Marie, who is here, and she's talking about her podcast called Twisted Philly, and it'll be up to you to decide whether or not she's a Not Your Average Listener. But she's had over 1 million downloads last month, so you have a big fan base and people are quite passionate about it. We're getting some texts that absolutely love what you do.
Oh my God.
have you touched, here's one of my favorites and it's become, it's come and gone, but it's still a favorite subject is the Toynbee tiles in our area. Did you ever touch on that?
I have not done that yet. So that's been in development. I'm trying to get in touch with the folks who made the documentary about it because I'd really love to interview them for
there
the
was
show.
There was no real resolution in that documentary. They thought they got really, really close to figuring out who it was, but I have a feeling it's going to be one of these things that just comes and goes and we'll never know who it was. For those who don't know, these tiles were embedded in roads and sidewalks around here that said bizarre things about like Jupiter and I think did it mention Kubrick in those? Or
I think it made reference to 2001.
Yeah,
I believe.
And,
yeah,
and all kinds of odd things and not just around here, around the country in different spots. But we had many of them. There was one on 476.
And you'd pass over it all the time when you were driving.
Well, there were some that are from different periods.
Yes.
So there was a bit of a resurgence of these tiles in, you know, the late 90s. And so the question is that somebody who was ripping off the original artist?
Carrying on the legacy of? Or that's the one thing with a lot of these things. It's hard to distinguish sometimes the pretender to the legend or the actual or original legend or whatever it is itself, you know, because there's so many people now who become aware of it. And then I'm going to do this, too.
Here's a text, and I'm curious about how current you will get with certain stories in our city. And this one says, please ask her if she's covered the case about Richard Petrone and Danielle Limbo, who disappeared in 2005 on South Street with their truck. Do you guys
We talk about this all the time.
So that was, every year there's a festival in the city. It's the Philadelphia Podcast Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years ago, I did a live show for the festival at Tattooed Moms. And that was the story that I chose because we were on South Street and it was a case from South Street. And it was amazing. I mean, the listeners that attended, everybody just had so many different theories about what happened. But what's so shocking is there's absolutely nothing. Wow. How do you make a massive, like, Dodge F-150? I know I'm getting the number wrong, but how do you make a truck like that disappear unless has it been compressed in one of the many auto junkyards that we have all around the city of Philadelphia? And why? The police did so much investigating, thinking perhaps there were ties to the mob.
Yeah.
There was nothing. These were just two decent human beings, and they have disappeared without a trace.
For all intents and purposes. So my brother, who, you know, was both my brothers are law enforcement, and you know, my older brother has often said he was Secret Service and the Justice Department. He said, you know, for all that we think that, we leave a trace. He said, there are people who literally just disappear off the grid. And you would think that with what we can do now, you can find people, and usually eventually you'll find them all. But there's a staggering amount of people that just disappear. And do you find that in your research as well?
There are. And it's very unsettling. And it's certainly not for a lack of effort on the part of the Philadelphia police.
Oh,
because
yeah,
they work tirelessly on so many cases. And that's what's frightening to me, is that there's just no remnants of anything.
When you see an officer who's retiring, and I think it just happened recently, and they've been investigating a case, and they, you know, as they're leaving the force, they still put out that last call. If anyone knows about this, it becomes a passion project for them. They want to give resolution to the family, and you can sense their angst, and they become part of this thing. And like in this case, it boggles the mind. Where did these people go?
It does. I interviewed two former police officers. One was with Philly PD, and one was a chief investigator for the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office back in earlier this year.
Yeah.
They were featured in a new series on Investigation Discovery. And you make such a great point, Steve, because they both talked about cases that stuck with them.
Yeah.
And cases that perhaps weren't solved, and what could they do in those last days as they were leaving their positions to hand it off and keep it going.
Yeah.
So with these two, it's still unsolved. There are no leads. There's nothing. No. It's just a cold case.
It's an absolutely cold case. I think it's probably one of the coldest cases other than the boy in the box in Philadelphia.
Right. There's another one.
What was the boy in the box?
Yeah.
So this is America's oldest, they call it America's oldest missing child. A little boy who was about 4 or 5 years old was found abandoned in the Fox Chase section of Philadelphia back in the 50s in a bassinet box that was from JCPenney. He was a beautiful little boy, and to this day, they have never discovered who he is. There are thoughts and suspicions around, was he connected to a family that sold him to another family in Philadelphia? Was he from out of town and dropped off here? There is no indication of who this young man is. And part of his DNA is on file with the University of Tennessee, where they have one of the biggest missing persons DNA collectives in the country. So if somebody were to say, I think I have a missing family member from 60 years ago,
they can check.
They could test it.
Yeah.
But so far, there's been no hits.
With the DNA over the time, though, it inherently degrades, does it not, or does it still remain
there's
viable?
There's some degradation. So for this particular case, they have the mandible of this young man.
Okay.
So they have a pretty substantial DNA sample. And obviously from 1950 to today, the transformation in DNA technology is just remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was somebody associated with the Kennedy, with the Lincoln assassination. They did a DNA check on, and they were able to link a family connection. So I guess if they're able to do that, this is not out of the realm of viability.
This little boy was alive when he was
found? No, he was deceased.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was deceased.
But it's a continuing mystery, and people are they want to find out, you know, and that people still will visit this young man's grave, and it's a wonderful tribute.
His tombstone says America's unknown child.
So what you've seen here, what is the one that just fascinates the hell out of you, that even you just can't get enough of, whether it be true crime or paranormal? What's the one that just, you know, rocks your world?
This is going to sound like such a nerd, but I am obsessed with City Hall.
Really?
I am. And I know you might be looking for something a bit more exciting or nefarious.
No, it's an amazing building.
Like Heidnik, but yeah. I am obsessed with City Hall. I am so annoying because anytime I talk about it, I just go off on these tangents.
In its architecture or?
In its architecture, in the fact that when William Penn came here in 1682, he developed a grid for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And it had four squares, and that is Franklin Square, Washington Square Park, the North and Southeastern Squares, and then the Center Square was designated to be a space where there would be a municipal or legislative building. And that was in 1682.
Yeah.
And City Hall, the construction wasn't done until 1901. And so it blows me away that over 300 years ago, he had a vision of where he wanted the hub for this city to be, and that's where it stands.
You know what he didn't have a vision of? Is the frickin' traffic snarl.
All right, I don't want to drive around
that building at any point in the day.
I'm telling you right now, in the 60s, the city wanted to tear it down.
Really?
And it would cost more money to tear it down than it ever cost to build it.
Wow. Listen,
and so they didn't tear it down. If they tried to tear that building down, I will chain myself to the front of City Hall. You will pry my cold, dead hands off that building.
I think the better fix is providing more options for and better traffic management. But you're right, Preston. Every time I see that pop up on my Ollie,
it's a disaster. Right. Yeah.
It's the largest Masonic structure in the country.
No, it is not.
What is?
They tried to be the largest building in the world, but the Eiffel Tower beat them. Mm-hmm. So then for a short period of time, they were the largest inhabited building in the world. For a very short time, we were the largest building in the country, and then the Washington Monument beat us. Oh. So, you know, hundreds of years ago, we were the underdogs that we are today.
Right.
We have a long history of underdogs.
There's also, so the way the stairs are constructed are like only certain stairwells will go to certain floors. Mm-hmm. So just in case like somebody tries to escape a courtroom,
it's like a Winchester Mansion design. Is that
no,
what you're saying?
No. So like I think it's so like, you know, anybody that's being tried for like a violent crime, if they try to escape, they can't like get to where like family court is, right, and stuff like that.
It doesn't matter. They try to get out and get into traffic, they'll get stuck. It'll be no problem. Yeah. Just quickly, I just want to ask, is there anything that's really bizarre associated with the City Hall or you know?
So there's rumors of hauntings.
Yeah. Right.
There is a little girl who haunts one of the very large courtrooms, and one of the guards that used to work there overnight, she seemed to be a very big fan of his, that it seemed like she would only come out when he was on shift, and you can hear her voice, and it sounds like she's laughing and giggling and playing. So I think that's one of the bizarre things about City Hall. The fact that there is no steel in that building.
Yeah.
So in some places, the walls are over 20 feet thick.
Whoa.
Because there's absolutely no steel holding that building.
A building
up
that big has no steel in it.
No.
Wow.
No.
So how dangerous is that?
Yeah.
Well, but when you think about it, the walls are 23 inches thick in places. So
it's not going to fall. And if it does fall,
it'll last through anything.
Okay. If it does collapse, the traffic around it will hold it up.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Right?
I think the other thing that's to me, it's interesting, may not be bizarre, but it took 2 years to cast the statue of William Penn that stands on top of City Hall.
Wow.
Yeah, and
just
it was
to cast it. Okay.
It was a Tacone brass factory up in Northeast Philadelphia where he was cast. It was 14 separate casts that had to be made to construct each of the pieces of William Penn.
Preston, they spent 4 months on his junk.
Oh my God.
That's just incredible.
Well, when you drive up the Ben Franklin Parkway, that's what it looks like,
it
right?
Does. It's angle, the classic.
It looks like he's very happy to see us.
That's the old legend, yeah.
All right, well, listen, we're going to put it to you, the listener, to determine whether or not Dina is indeed, does she qualify as a Not Your Average listener? Her podcast is called Twisted Philly. It's very, very popular. In fact, Philly Magazine had it part of their 13 Made in Philly podcasts to listen to right now. She had her 1 millionth download last month. Once again, it's called Twisted Philly. But right now, we're going to ask you to text in and let us know. Not your average listener or not. Yes or no. We need to text either one of those words to 39333. If we get more yes votes than no votes, she gets $250 from Primo Hoagie.
That's how it works.
All right. So,
I don't want the $250. I want to give it back for Camp Out for Hunger.
Wow.
That's very
generous. Well, then you better vote yes.
Just vote yes.
Yeah. If you're going to vote no, you vote yes now.
If you're voting,
3-3-3.
You're voting no, you're voting yes to hunger. So you can't win no matter.
All right. Do that now. We're going to take a break. Dina's going to stick around. We'll have her on the other side to find out how she did. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
This 93.3 WMMR Audio On Demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Do you want the most important purchase of your life to be based on your negotiating skills? Not the case at Steven Singer Jewelers. You are guaranteed to get the perfect price every day. They make the experience of buying an engagement ring easy with no BS. Check him out at the other corner of 8th and Walnut in Philly or online at IHateStevenSinger.com. Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, you know that I go to Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spas. Whether you want a rejuvenating massage or a refreshing facial, Hand and Stone is the place to go. Introductory massage or facial start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their over 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Thank you very much, Kathy. So in the last segment, we heard stories from our Not Your Average Listener guest. It's Dina Marie, who is the creator and host of Twisted Philly, a podcast that's been very, very successful over the past couple of years. Recently reached her milestone of over 1 million downloads. Very impressive.
And it's about the area you live in.
And some of the odd, out of the ordinary stories, interesting, historical.
Fringe.
Very, very fringe, cool stuff. And she shared a few of those with us. And you can dive right into her podcast if that is something that piques your interest. And we had you text in and vote as to whether or not she wins our cash prize this morning. And the votes are in.
Yeah.
So I'm ready to reveal at the cash prize from our friends at Primo Hoagies. The, let's see, it was 98% to 2%. So, yes, yeah! She's a winner.
Yeah.
A not your average listener.
Had a feeling.
And apparently she had said that, she's going to donate the $250 to the Camp Out for Hunger.
That's very generous.
So Marissa pointed out that 25 people are pro-hunger then. Who texted in.
No.
Yeah. But no, we appreciate the contribution. That's very, very cool of you. And I, for one, am going to start listening to your podcast.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Because I love that type of stuff. And especially around here when it's tangible. I mean, it's like you can go and see it. That.
Touch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Dig it up.
Yep, if you want to. Yes. Dig it up.
Just don't get arrested.
What is your next episode going to be about?
So I'm working on an episode about the flu epidemic that hit this city about 100 years ago, right around this time.
She was just chiding Kathy.
Kathy, get your flu shot. I don't want you to be a statistic in that episode.
I said I would listen to it.
All right.
I'd listen to that podcast.
At least she's open-minded.
That's progress.
Yeah. All right. Twisted Philly. Let's hear it for Dina Marie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And you can hang around if you want to. Feel free, because we have another great guest that we're going to get to. I do need to mention Primo Hoagies. It's not just a hoagie, it's Primo. And if you are interested in nominating someone, or you yourself have a Not Your Average Listener story, send us your information and contact the points to listener@WMMR.com. And maybe you'll come in and sit here where Dina is.
I have to give props to the Chestnut Hill Primo, where I go now quite often. Awesome. Love you guys. Thank you for feeding me.
All right, we're going to go to a caller, and it's Camilla. Hi, Camilla.
Hi, Preston. How are you?
I'm great. I don't think I'm nearly as good as you. Why are you calling us?
Because I just won $1,000.
Yes! That must mean that Camilla entered our Birthday Bucks Part 2.
That's sensational.
And won $1,000. I'll point this out. This is a company-wide contest.
Yeah.
It's not just MMR. And guess what? Most of the winners are happening right here on the Preston and Steve Show.
And we are thrilled about that.
I think that we have the luckiest listeners in the world. Not because they listen to us.
No,
but
because
I mean,
I think they're owed it because they put up with the pain of listening to us.
I would agree.
And I think God is interceding on their behalf.
Camilla, where are you from?
I'm from Lumberton, New Jersey.
Okay, and tell us just a little bit about you. What do you do? You got any kids? You dating anybody? Any sexual hang-ups or anything like that? Or no.
I'm married. I have two kids, an 11-year-old and a 7.5-year-old, and I'm a graphic designer.
Okay. You know what, though? Please, do me a favor and don't spend any of it on them.
Yes.
Spend it on yourself. Splurge. Have some fun, all right?
All right.
All right, congratulations. Let's hear it for Camilla, everybody.
Yeah.
Our winner of $1,000 Birthday Bucks. Next chance is coming up at 11 o'clock. Casey, I did not set this up ahead of time, but there is only one piece of music that we can play for our next guest, who is here to speak about this special screening. Actually, it's going to be going on for a little while. And we love having him in because he's just a cool, personable guy with a lot of information that we geek out about as well. He's the chief astronomer and planetarium director for the Franklin Institute. Ladies and gentlemen, Derek Pitts is here.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning.
I had tried to hit it right at the crescendo of the
it was good. You did
the
a
2001
great job.
Theme. Yeah, so well. The reason I'm playing this is because you will be screening the film at the, I've forgotten the official
Tuttleman.
Name of the...
Tuttleman IMAX.
Thank you.
Tuttleman Omniverse Theater.
Wow.
IMAX Theater, I should say.
Really. Yes.
Yes. And it it opens on Friday, October 19th, and it's not just the film.
Okay.
This is the 70mm remastered version that we're presenting in IMAX. So
this is the way.
Spectacular?
This is the way to see
can
it.
You say spectacular?
Yeah. Yeah. And we can put this in context, Derek. So... When I first saw 2001 A Space Odyssey in 1968, it was in 70mm,
right.
You know, with the full-blown intermission. 2001 was rock. I mean, it's the same year that Planet of the Apes and everything came out, and some people, you know, there was stuff to sample. But 2001 was always poised as an experience. It was going to transport you into space. It was going to open, blow you away. Stanley Kubrick, obviously at that point, an established genius of a director. But the amount of work and meticulous attention that went into this movie, you need to see it in 70mm. It's meant to be a journey into space.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because at that time when it was produced, he produced it with the sense that it was going to be something at a whole nother level. Right.
So
beyond everything else that was out at the time, despite the space part, that
right.
was a totally different thing too.
Yeah, and Derek, no CGI. No, these were
no
all
CGI.
Physical effects that they achieve in this movie.
Just
exactly.
Think about that very, very first opening scene with the. With the spaceship, you're walking around in that
the space station.
Yeah, the space station. Like, and that is. That's not CGI.
That's blown away. Massive. So you have, by the way, you have many of the special effects artists that went on to work in on the Star Wars and subsequent movies. The genius is Douglas Trumbull and other people who were part of the effects crew.
Sure, because you can see a lot of what was in that film translated down to other subsequent films and television programs that came out.
Yes.
Trying to mimic what had been done in 2001.
So after 2001 came out, and after Star Wars came out, and it was a huge success, George Lucas. They re-released 2001, and George Lucas, who's a massive fan, said that this is the greatest space movie of all time and will always be.
Yeah,
because it's so much more. But it is it's an experience, and I want people to go when they go to know that it's a different pacing for this kind of movie. You're meant the way almost the way you would look at a piece of artwork. You're supposed to experience this movie and really take the time to be a part of it. It is to this day. From the Thus Spake Zarathustra, which is that opening piece,
right.
The 2001
iconic
theme,
piece, right?
Iconic piece. I start to well up because it's that important in my life, and when you see it all the way through the end, it was like an acid trip without taking acid. It was just an amazing thing.
Well, you know what? If you look at that film, what you see is by the time you get to the end, you've been taken through a string of really complex ideas.
Yeah.
About the evolution of humans on this planet, and it makes you think about all the different aspects of how we started out in one way on the planet, how we then evolved to go into space, how we then evolved to look for life elsewhere in the solar system, all these kinds of things. And then it's backed by the incredible special effects and visual effects that just blow you away.
That still hold up, and as you watch it,
absolutely.
Remember this, with physical effects and everything you're watching,
yeah.
97% of the movie was filmed inside, indoors.
It's hard to believe it when you look at some of the incredible scenes. Like one of my favorite scenes in that film is the one where the bone goes up in the air and then the transition goes to a Pan Am spacecraft from Earth on its way to dock with a circular space station.
And so as the legend goes, I know we're geeking out here, Kubrick had a whole other soundtrack that he junked and went to classical music, hence the Blue Danube becomes the piece of music as you're seeing this ballet in space, and you're seeing a nuclear satellite pass over Earth and all these things that are going on. Again, all done with physical effects.
the effects of the movie and also just the there are huge I think the first words are uttered 22 minutes into the movie. So yeah. that's right.
It's a long time before you get to anything, right?
Yeah.
Derek, how did this influence you as a scientist, this film? Because I've found a lot of scientists have been influenced along the way by science fiction and as a kid and saying maybe that's possible.
Yeah, for me, this definitely was a confirmation that this is the field that I want to be in, where the horizons for what can happen in the future are just enormous, and they're off the planet. So the idea of docking with a space station and then going on to the moon from there, I was all right there for that because, you know, this was predicting the future in a way of what was going to happen, and I wanted to be on that ship going out into space to do those kinds of explorations. And so when I look back on this, this is one of the big influences in my decision to get into astronomy and space exploration.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it.
There's so many scientists, so many people. In fact, Carl Sagan himself was sort of a consultant on the film. He was friends with Kubrick, as the legend goes. And Sagan was the one that sort of said, not to give too much away, if you've never seen it, you should see it, is that the alien presence in the movie should be suggested rather than overtly shown. And so that really was part of the genius of the movie.
Right. It makes it much more powerful of an impact than doing it that way. So it leaves to your imagination a tremendous amount more with just the suggestion of what could be.
In the movie, there are 3 points at which this monolith, which is we believe to be a communication device or an evolutionary device, appear. The dawn of man, on the moon, and then later on Jupiter and beyond. But it's funny. There's so many legends and things. We had Keir DeLay in here who plays pool, and I was geeking out big time. I had him sign my Blu-ray.
That's
for
pretty cool.
Yeah, and he says, you know, the fan base of the movie comes from all over the place. He says, you know, the people that have been affected by it, some people just hate it. They just hate it because the pacing is not what they are used to.
Right.
If you open up your mind and put yourself in the context of what it was designed to do, you will love it. You know, especially 70mm with the full-blown sound system.
I just think there's so many different angles that you can come at this movie from, you know, because it's got some historical stuff, it's got the space stuff, it's got some religious stuff, it's got some future stuff. It also has all the great visual effects, the way the music is interwoven with everything to work out just perfectly. And then all of the other suggestive stuff about what's going to come down the pike in the future, like all these scenes with the computer that's operating the spacecraft Jupiter 5.
The HAL 9000.
All that stuff coming out from there. And what we have in our world today, you can see how this movie would be so visionary at that time.
Well, see how much is predicted. They sit down and they're using iPads to watch, basically iPads to watch a television broadcast on the BBC in which they're interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you've watched it recently, does the tech and everything, the information still pretty solid?
I think it's still pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's still pretty solid because in this film, I think they did a tremendous amount of research to find out how they could reproduce all the effects that they needed to reproduce for the science to make it hold up well.
Right.
And so, you know, when you look at how they tried to deal with microgravity in both the aircraft and on the space station, you know, that stuff still holds up. You got the magnetic aspect on one side, and then you have the rotation of the spacecraft on the space station on the other side.
Yeah.
And then the long trip out to Jupiter, that stuff still holds up today.
They did not predict the fall of Howard Johnson's and Pan Am, though. They missed both of those.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, there was a little bit of a problem there.
2001 wasn't exactly the right year. But however, at that point, you know, I still... you know, that Pan Am Clipper, that air, my dad, I remember was, you know, a businessman, a commuter, and he was flying Pan Am all the time. And it was like, oh my God.
Well, you know, when you look at it right at that time, this is about the time when the supersonic transport aircraft was beginning to come into use. And so you had all this high speed aircraft idea going on in real life, real time at that moment.
Yeah.
So it could seem like this is the next jump, you know, and not to mention the fact that this film comes out 1 year before we send people to the moon.
Yeah.
Wow.
So talk about being like right out there on the cutting edge. First, this film comes out, and then a year later, you have people walking on the moon, and then another year after that, we've almost gotten jaded about the idea of people walking on the moon because we've sent so many missions there safely, brought people back, brought the moon rocks back, and we're sort of anticipating that this is where we're going to head.
So, Derek, where do you now, with the whole bunch of news that's coming out about a revitalizing of the space program, of a space force, of perhaps a trip to Jupiter?
Force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. But, I mean, all of this stuff is interesting on so many levels, you know?
Yeah, it is.
What is the most exciting to you?
You know, in terms of this movie, the most exciting thing to me is that we've switched our attention or our sort of search for extraterrestrial life from looking way across the universe. We've brought it back from there, not just to our little group of galaxies and not just our galaxy,
right,
but we've actually pulled it right into our solar system now.
Right.
So it's beginning to look to us like some of the most likely places we're going to find life are on the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. Mm-hmm.
So as predicted,
like the movie.
Predicted in 2001.
Like that's the cool. movie.
That's cool.
So yeah. That's what I think is one of the most exciting things that's happening right now with our understanding of what's going on in the universe.
I'm fascinated by this stuff. I don't have the understanding that you do to quite comprehend all of these things, but I'm curious as to, I think that science is also facing some hurdles on a public perception level right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's true.
With social media and things like YouTube and so on, there are a lot of science deniers.
Right.
How much of a hurdle is that for the scientific community?
You know, it's a real challenge. It's a challenge for the scientific community in giving people an opportunity to, you know, see and understand the real science. And with the rise of social media, everybody can have a voice, which is a great thing. But the problem is that we have to allow ourselves to recognize some kind of authority about how things are, right? So while people want to make up their own stories about how some phenomenon works, and they want to believe that, and, you know, that works for them, the problem with that is that it's not the scientists that they're actually pushing back against. It's actually the universe that they're pushing back against. And here's what I mean. The universe is what it is. The universe does what it does. It's been doing that since before this planet showed up, and it's going to continue to do that long after this planet is gone. And what scientists do is scientists observe and they report on what the universe is doing, what the universe is. So when a science denier says, "I don't believe that," you're not just rejecting scientists. It's not the scientists you're rejecting. It's the universe you're rejecting. And that is the ultimate truth. So are you going to tell me that what you're saying is more than what the universe knows? No, that's not the case. So the job that scientists have to do is to make science much more easily understandable to the general public and invite them on the journey of how do we know. Not just put out pronouncements and say this is what it is, but let me take you on the trip of how it is we know this.
Yes, and people like you and Neil deGrasse Tyson, who we've had on the show before, can explain it and dumb it down and break it down for us, are doing a great job of that.
Everybody can understand it. It's just, will you allow me to bring this to you so you can do it?
Yep. So there's a book that I'm reading that's called A Short History of Nearly Everything, and it's Bill Bryson wrote it, and it takes really broad like concepts of the history of the universe, and it starts shrinking it, and it makes it understandable to morons like myself. And you get into the solar system. He starts at the universe, and then he gets into the solar system. And this book, I think, came out in 2001 or 2002. Mm. There have been a number of discoveries in between the time that the book came out and now, and it's fascinating. Within our own solar system, what we don't know about. And you mentioned the moons of Jupiter and moons of Saturn. They're discovering new moons, new planetoids all the time.
Right.
And I find that amazing because this is a short amount of time ago that book came out. But even in that short amount of time, new discoveries are happening.
If people knew the stories of how it is that we've been able to discover these new objects in the solar system, they would be fascinated to learn how it is we know that stuff. And that's part of that journey that we need to take people on so that they understand it better. So here's another little aspect about that, about discovering stuff that we didn't know about before. We currently know more about the moon than we know about the deep oceans of our planet.
Wow.
So any of the opportunities for people to get in on live transmissions that come from research vessels out on the ocean.
That would be awesome.
Robots that are looking at the seafloor. That's a tremendous opportunity for people to understand how we learn these things. You know, scientists don't invent things. As I said, we just report on what the universe is doing. So to take people on that journey
gives them a chance to understand how we get there.
I watched with my mother the transmission from the moon when, you know, Neil Armstrong stepped out
on the surface
and the whole thing. And I remember it was you can't even describe the epiphany and the rush of emotions. Even as a kid, I had, you know, looking at that. So to feel a part and an ownership of it and to connect to it is a great thing. Speaking of that, have you seen First Man and what's your assessment of it?
I'm saving it up for this weekend.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Definitely going to see it, though. I'm very excited about seeing that because that's, like you said, that's one of those emotional touch points. And the reason why it's an emotional touch point and why so many people around the world stopped whatever they were doing on that day and all looked at some form of media to go along with this is because that one person carried a piece of all of us, and all of us were there.
Yeah.
We all want to do this stuff. We just want science to accept our place in that, whether we're actually researchers or not.
I've always said that I'm fascinated with and have tremendous respect for people who say, you know what, nobody's ever gone over there before, and I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to see what it is. And that started with people traveling across the country, traveling across the ocean, into the skies.
Well, guess what? You now have a chance to do that.
Do tell.
Yes, you do have a chance.
Okay.
You can actually make a trip to space. Yes, you can do this.
Okay.
It's very simple.
How?
So Virgin Galactic.
Yeah.
Right? For $250,000.
Wait.
Hold on. Don't laugh.
$250,000. You're paying for it?
You can go to space. Sure. Right. Yeah. Now, just 10 years ago, you could do the same thing on a Russian Soyuz. Well, there was a little mishap last week.
Yeah,
but in any case,
you could go on a Russian tech. Yeah.
Right. But that was $22 million. Now it's down to $250,000. And that's my point.
It's going in the right way.
10 years
from now. In another 10 years, it's going to be down to $100,000.
Do you know what's moderately affordable?
What's that?
I put that in context.
Right?
The Vomit Comet. Yeah. You could take a ride in that.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah. There you go. That's reasonable. $4,500. You can do that on a weekend. Now, you might say, wait a minute, $4,500. But for that kind of experience that you can't have any place else, definitely worth doing it.
You experience weightlessness, basically.
You do.
It's how the astronauts train, a lot of them, in anticipation of going into space. It's actually how they shot Apollo 13. They would shoot the scenes in that aircraft, and that's how they were able to achieve that weightlessness.
And, you know, I think these experiences that are coming forward now that are opening up for people to be able to do these things, it's going to get less expensive to do these things as time goes forward. But this helps to open the door for people's understanding of what it really means to explore space. And then when you take that back and look at what Kubrick did in the film to give people that experience without taking them there, but showing them with such incredible detail, it made people feel like, wow, I could do that, or I'd like to go along on a trip like that. And I think that's one of the real great things about how this film, even with the very, very high artistic standard that it holds, it still invites and pulls people into it and makes them feel as if they're right there along with these discoveries and experiences.
So the last time it was in 70 millimeter years ago, I saw it 5 times in 1 week. I will be seeing it multiple times.
This is supposed to be a really, really great print of it. Because it's in 70 millimeter, it has these very, very rich, saturated colors that really make you feel like you're right there on the sets.
And I want to point out the Tuttleman Theater, unlike your standard IMAX screen, kind of it's curved and kind of goes around you a little bit.
This is IMAX Dome.
Yeah, it's not just the straight up and down screen, which is a wonderful experience in itself, but when you have it, when you've literally got to turn your head around a little bit and get a feel for your surroundings, you're in it. You are in it.
So for Steve, imagine having seen this on flat screen before, but now you're going to be immersed in the image. Mm. And so for you, you're going to sit right in the center of the theater, right down below the doghouse, as they call it. You're going to sit right down there so that you can have the image wrapped around you.
Looking forward to it.
All right, so Derek, this opens tomorrow, and it's going to run through November 25th.
Yes.
Multiple screenings today?
Multiple screenings, yeah. Okay. Right. Come check it out. It'll be great.
It's only $15. So in this day and age, that's a pretty cheap movie ticket.
I know you. If you're dismissive of it, do yourself a favor. Trust me. Go check it out. You won't regret doing it.
This is an experience
you have to have, because it's this iconic film in this iconic theater that's really built just for this kind of immersion.
Yeah.
And you're, like you said, you're doing yourself a great favor if you go check this out.
Excellent. Derek, we love having you in here.
Hey, thanks for having
me,
Jen.
It's been too long. We gotta get back
together
soon.
Yeah, have me back more often. We'll talk about some other stuff.
We definitely will. All right, Chief Astronomer and Planetarium Director of the Franklin Institute, Mr. Derek.
Yeah.
Thank you. You
bet, bud. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back in a moment. More to come, dear friends. Make sure you stay with us.
Our 50-day march to Metallica continues with your shot to meet the band, all part of the MMR 50th finale with Metallica. Your chance to qualify happens every single day leading up to the big show, Thursday, October 25th, an indoor blowout the new sound system mega rock extravaganza at Wells Fargo Center.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
And now we've upped the ante with a major prize edition. Tickets to go along with each daily prize. It's MMR's 50th finale with Metallica. On sale now at WellsFargoCenterPhilly.com. Listen for complete concert coverage from the venue with Jackson and Jackie Bam Bam. 93.3 WMMR and Metallica. Everything that rocks.
You know what I forgot to do? I forgot to give away some passes. We just had Derek Pitts from the Franklin Institute here, and I have passes to go see 2001 A Space Odyssey in rare 70-millimeter film projection at the Franklin Institute's Tuttleman IMAX Theater. So the showing that we will have, are, you know what, I'm not sure when these are good for.
I think
for.
It's run of engagement. I think they go through the 17th. So not the entire run,
okay.
But in between tomorrow, which is the opening, and then through the middle of November.
I have five of these to give away, 215-263-WMMR. So call right now, and we will give those to you, which is cool.
I fear that you and I, Preston, we're hitting almost critical overload and geeking out. But but it's so cool, and Derek is so, you know, good. At what he does, between that and you know, just talking about the movie, it's unbelievable. You almost I was like, Jesus Christ, tap the brakes, because it gets away from you, but you get so excited.
Yeah, so we'll give you those movie passes. Go and see it. We're gonna do the Bizarre File
now. Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right, this morning it is brought to you by Robbins Diamonds in tax-free Delaware with thousands of rings in self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax versus the 8% tax in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds. Well, one man's Halloween decorations were so scary, someone called 911 believing that they were real. This does happen from time to time, but this one is interesting because the Ohio State Highway Patrol responded to the home of Army veteran Delbert Halsinger after an alarm witness saw the upside-down airplane in his yard. So he had a plane crash in his front yard.
What's funny, though, is it's an upside-down airplane, but there's skeletons in it.
Yeah, so the 85-year-old who's retired from the Air National Guard set up the fake crash along with a skeleton and a witch spilling out of the cockpit for the season. And the vet loves aviation and said he's surprised anyone mistook it for a real accident. His neighbors were also surprised by the response. He has even more plans for the display in his yard. He's thinking about adding a witch on a broom near the airplane so it looks like it ran into her.
I love that.
He also has a 9-foot dinosaur skeleton with a motion sensor that lights up and roars in the woods behind his house. I'm waiting for it because we almost get it every year. Sometimes there's like a real dead body that people will think is a Halloween decoration.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, the whole viscera and everything. It looks so good. What is that made out? Is that Jell-O?
All right, so we will.
Oh, dear God.
We will. It's like Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's Cairo syrup, guys.
Oh my God.
Such a great scene.
Some leftovers aren't meant to be brought home. A roasted pig was discovered by a beagle from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection's canine unit on Thursday at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. I mean, like a whole roasted pig.
You can only bring 3 ounces of a roasted pig, right?
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
The beagle named Hardy smelled the cooked pig in the luggage after a traveler from Ecuador had been carrying it.
Agents seized...
Honey, did you pack my pig?
...and destroyed the nearly 2-pound pig. No word on whether Hardy was given any of it to eat or not. But, I mean, it's the head and everything. It's wild. Well, what's a zoo to do if Taylor Swift escapes from her enclosure? Not the singer. A one-year-old bongo calf named Taylor Swift at the Sacramento Zoo. Visitors spotted the animal outside her exhibit on Sunday afternoon. The zoo said that visitors were ushered to a safe area at the front of the facility while staff worked to guide their escaped calf to a secure area.
He escaped too.
A zoo veterinarian said Taylor did not appear to have any serious injuries or complications from her brief escape. Officials are trying to figure out how she managed to get out of her enclosure. We'll stay at the zoo for a moment. Tigers are kept in pens for a reason. The Oakland Zoo in California is investigating after a video recorded by a recent visitor shows a man climbing the barrier around the tiger enclosure and quickly climbing back out when the tiger starts to approach him. The witness said, "I heard somebody who said he had dropped his glasses."
Jesus.
"But when he came back up, I didn't see."
"He can't see without his glasses."
"Yeah.
Put his glasses on. Put on his glasses."
But when he came back up, the witness said, "I didn't see nothing in his hand."
"He didn't see nothing?"
"He didn't see nothing in his hand." The zoo released a statement saying, in part, the Oakland...
"He didn't see anything."
The
tiger.
The tiger's correcting his grammar.
"He didn't see anything."
Not "he didn't see nothing." The Oakland Zoo meets and exceeds safety requirements set by state, federal, and AZA-accredited standards. This is their statement.
Yeah.
"We hope that all of our visitors act responsibly and don't attempt to put themselves in potentially unsafe situations. They are investigating, by the way, and considering changes to their security." Japanese people are renowned for their manners and politeness, but this incident shows just how far that politeness can go. A man recently went into a convenience store, asked the manager if he could rob the place, and upon being refused, he left and later turned himself into police.
That's the way you do it.
The unnamed man allegedly entered the store.
"Would you like to rob this establishment?"
Around 1:40 a.m. and told the manager, "I've come with the intent to intimidate you and rob this store. May I ask you to please cooperate with me?"
Oh, my God.
He didn't get the answer that he was hoping for, so he turned around and walked out quietly without taking anything. The convenience store had reported, manager had apparently said, "I can't do that" to the robber.
"Just one question. At any time during my presentation, was I at all threatening?"
he's doing a survey?
Yeah.
About 5 minutes later, he...
"Would you describe me as menacing?" "Would you say I was an asshat or an ass clown?"
He confessed his attempted robbery. After searching the man, officers discovered he had a kitchen knife that he had never even pulled out during his polite exchange with the convenience store manager.
"What could I have done to improve my presentation?"
They're wondering if maybe he wanted to get arrested.
That seems to be the case.
That's why he did it. All right, and then we'll do one more story. The Albert family asks that you keep an eye out for their giant nose. Someone swiped a beloved 50-pound, 2-foot-tall plastic nose from their front porch on Saturday night.
Like from Double Dare?
Just like that, Steve.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. Delia Albert said, "We woke up this morning and the nose was gone."
Huh.
Delia said her husband, who works for an advertising agency, rescued the nose out of the trash a year ago. It was a discarded prop from a photo shoot, though she wasn't sure what the campaign was that used it.
Oh, man, that blows. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, you really ran away with that one. Since last October, it's been sitting on their front porch. The couple's kids were devastated at the loss of their nose. She said they burst into tears, super upset. They couldn't believe that somebody would take something that didn't belong to them. We didn't realize how attached they were to it. It really clearly brought them a lot of joy. Last Halloween, the family placed a bowl of candy beneath its nostrils with a sign that read, "Pick one, please."
See, it's good.
This year, they had plans to decorate it with a mustache and a pair of giant black-rimmed glasses. Albert said, we had a lot of good times and good laughs with that nose.
Frankly, we still have the vagina in the backyard. That's a lot of fun. We use that as a barbecue.
As a barbecue?
Yeah, sure.
Wow. The nose is quite heavy, so Albert expects that someone or someone's must have needed a car to pull off the nose job. And that is what I will give you in the bizarre file for now, my friend. Why don't we take a break? Come back in a moment. We'll ask you a lesson question. We'll see who has been paying attention this morning and award them for that. Trash Music News is on the way as well. We'll be right back.
Preston and Steve.
On 93.3 WMMR.
93.3 WMMR. Michael Philip Jagger. That's his full name, Mick. Oh. For short. Yeah, I didn't know that, Nick. Just pulled up the Wikipedia page.
I brought it up because I was interested. I couldn't remember where he went to school. I knew it was in London somewhere.
I've been
thinking about London a lot lately because we'll be there in a week.
Yeah.
And he went to the London School of Economics.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think he graduated with honors, too. I mean, he had a really interesting background and highly educated.
Casey was just on the phone with London.
Yeah.
Yes.
With Mick Jagger.
Are you coming?
I hear you're coming.
Yeah, I want to play crack shot.
Yeah.
Well, a BB would kill him.
Yeah. Oh my god!
It'd be like holding a hip, a 38 mm-hmm. on him.
Uh-huh. He's in phenomenal shape actually for his age. At
it blew my ass off.
Yeah. So, you know what? I didn't even consider that. I considered doing. I like the Rolling Stones. I don't love the Rolling Stones as I do the Beatles. But there's got to be just as much history and things to see that would be Rolling Stone-centric around London, I would imagine.
Yeah,
you know? Sure. They got their start in London?
There's the Chelsea drugstore that you can go to, right? That's referenced in...
you can't always get what you want.
Yeah, and Jackie Bam Bam was telling me a little bit about some of the things that that are available over there, too. So, like, there's so much history with so many rock acts I've been talking with somebody that works at the O2 Arena, which is sort of their version of the Wells Fargo Center, and it's one after another, and mm-hmm. they had the reunion of Led Zeppelin there a few years ago. So Zeppelin and Floyd and the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and all of the biggies were all at one point based in London.
In my opinion, and this is not besmirching our country, but the greatest rock bands of all time come from England, in my humble opinion. Man, I wish Jackie could go with us. How fun would that be to have
It'd be
Jackie
great.
Bam Bam in London with us? Oh, my God. Over the top. All right. We're going to do today's lesson question, and we are going to give away a pair of tickets. SPR presents Rival Sons Tuesday, October 23rd at Ardmore Music Hall. So that's next week. And the question is, what state does Joshua Jackson know everything about? 215-263-WMMR, right? What state does Joshua Jackson know everything about? He just won't shut up about it. 215-263-WMMR. Call right now. We are going to do the trash while we are waiting for you to call in.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
This morning brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. No matter what time of day, two bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches are always a good thing. And now you can get two for $5 at Dunkin' Donuts with Dunkin's Go-To's. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, Jen Harley explaining in an interview what she believes is at the root of the relationship problems with her and Jersey Shore star Ronnie Ortiz Magro. Says Harley, who shares a child with Magro, quote, "As it turns out, we are both incredibly stupid."
Oh, my God.
Ariana Grande seen out and about New York yesterday covering over a Pete Davidson tattoo on her finger by using a Band-Aid.
Oh, okay.
Grande says the Band-Aid is not a commentary on Davidson, but rather an admission that she believes him to be a festering wound.
Oh, my God.
And finally, Tara Reid claiming that the reason she was recently kicked off a Delta Airlines flight is because they wanted to put her Yorkie in the overhead compartment. The airline says it's ridiculous, saying it was Reid herself they wanted to put in the overhead compartment.
No.
And that's your Hollywood trash.
All right, let's see if somebody knows the answer to our lesson question this morning. We need to find out what state Joshua Jackson knows everything about. 215-263-WMMR. I will go to Catherine. Hey, Catherine, good morning. I know. Hi, Catherine. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Let's try it again. Yeah. The button wasn't it. Now I can hear you, Catherine. How you doing?
Okay.
All right, what state does Joshua Jackson know everything about?
What city or what state? What state?
What state, yeah.
Mississippi. California.
Just keep going.
Well, that's 2 out of 50 that are incorrect. Yeah. So thank you for calling in California, Mississippi. Let me go to Nick, see if he knows the answer. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Nick.
I'm good.
Okay. What's the answer, Nick?
Is it Maine?
It's Maine.
Yeah!
Hang on a second. So you have to be listening. We weren't looking for, like, what state he came from or anything like that.
No,
it's,
no.
It's, I had mispronounced, it was miswritten. It said mainsplaining. He was mainsplaining instead of mansplaining, as Steve was saying. He was just going on and on about Maine, and that's how we got the question. So you need to hear what we said earlier in the show in order to know the answer to these questions.
99% of the time, if you guess, you'll be wrong.
Oh, yeah. So Nick got it right, and we are going to give him tickets to see this band right here. This is Rival Sons. And they are going to be performing for a Pierre Presents event Tuesday, October 23rd, the Ardmore Music Hall. And it's an invitation-only 21 and over event with professional recording by our friends at Indre Recording Production. Details and a list of featured events where you can win tickets at WMMR.com. Let's do music news.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music News on 93.3 WMMR.
Yeah! Kapuya! Kapuya!
Hi, bro. All right, it's brought to you by Punchline.
Thank you.
I would support it, though. They do look nice.
Thanks.
Punchline Philly.
Went to the king.
the king.
So Punchline Philly presenting Amy Schumer at the Legendary Tower Theater Saturday, December 1st.
Huh.
Reserve seats on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com. Amy Schumer live at the Tower December 1st. Let's see. Sad news. And yet another mysterious death in the music world. All that remains, guitarist Ole Herbert, or it's Ollie, I'm not sure. I don't know much about this guy.
No, neither do I.
Has died. He was 44 years old. With some strange circumstances, but they're not saying anything is foul play. Although details about what happened remain unclear. Apparently he passed away in an accident near his home in Connecticut. He was found dead in a pond. Mm.
Dead in a pond?
Yeah, near his home around 5 p.m. on Tuesday.
Jeez.
After he was reported missing. Officers searched the area and found Herbert's body in the pond, with officials saying at press time that there didn't appear to be anything suspicious about the situation. An autopsy was slated for yesterday to determine the cause of death. The band said in a statement, Ollie was an incredibly talented guitarist and songwriter who defined rock and metal from the Northeast. His impact on the genres in our lives will continue indefinitely. The band and family request that you please respect the privacy and remember Ollie by celebrating the great music that he made. His widow, Beth, later released a statement via his official Facebook page and said, "Thank you for all the kind thoughts and words. I don't want to go into what happened until we have a complete picture, but as soon as we do, there will be a statement from the family on this page. In the meantime, please respect our privacy as there are still relatives being informed of Ollie's passing. Thank you." Until his death, Herbert was the only other remaining original member of the group, aside from singer Phil Labonte. He appeared on all 9 of the group's albums, including the upcoming Victim of the New Disease, which is coming out on November 9th. So they have new music coming out. And
that's crazy.
Unfortunately, he died. So we shall see if we find out exactly what the cause of that was. A lawsuit filed by 4 former members of Ghost against the band's leader, Tobias Forge, has been dismissed by a Swedish court.
Ha ha, suckers.
Forge, who founded the group 8 years ago, was sued by the 4 ex-members in April 2017. They accused the singer of cheating them out of their rightful share of the profits from the band's album releases and world tours. The lawsuit was filed in the district court in Linköping, Sweden, where Ghost was originally based. It claimed that a partnership agreement existed between Forge and the 4 former members, all of whom performed anonymously in the band as nameless ghouls. As a result of the lawsuit, Forge was forced to reveal his identity after years of performing in a mask as Papa Emeritus. He responded that no legal partnership ever existed between him and the other members, that they were paid a fixed salary to perform as his backing band, and that they were essentially session musicians.
You worked for me. That's it.
Yeah.
Ha ha. You have the right to suck my ass.
the trial lasted for 6 days, and a 108-page decision was released on Wednesday dismissing the case. The 4 other members were also ordered to pay Forge's legal fees, which could amount to approximately $150,000. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, honestly, from the get-go, that it was always my understanding that the band was him.
Yeah.
And that everyone else was hired to play, basically. Yeah. And that's why, you know, he kind of played it the right way. If that's what you're going to do, their identities were never revealed.
Yeah. They have 3 weeks to appeal the ruling, so we'll see if they end up doing that. Dave Grohl has revealed that the band intends to take some time off before recording a new album. He shared the news during an interview with Billboard, saying you kind of set these goals for yourself to see if you can do it again, even when you're crawling to the finish line, you know that it's there. So here we are, the last set of shows. We've been on for a year and a half, and I'm ready to take a break, but I'm ready to do it again at some point. They've been taking a year to two off between their last few albums, although Dave tends to pop up in between LP cycles with other projects such as Sound City's documentary from a few years ago. So the plan for now is to take some time off, and we'll see how long that lasts. Greta Van Fleet has released a stream of yet another new song. It is titled You're the One. It's the fifth...
You're the one that I want.
It's the fifth and probably final track released ahead of the band's first full-length LP, Anthem of the Peaceful Army, which arrives Friday, tomorrow. The quartet has previously previewed the tunes Anthem, When the Curtain Falls, Watching Over, and Lover Leaver.
I heard, although I've not heard the song yet, that there is now a mashup that DJ Cummerbund has done.
It started making the rounds, yeah. I saw it was reported on, in a couple of news services.
And it's Zeppelin and Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And you know what? We should get it and,
yeah, we should
and
grab
hear,
that.
Hear how it sounds. I don't know the two songs that that he's mashed up with them. But
I would like to hear that.
Yeah. It's supposed to be pretty cool.
DJ Cummerbund.
If anybody, well, we'll have to find it later. This is stupid. David Bowie's statue in Buckinghamshire, England was vandalized for the second time since its installation in March.
Why?
We don't know. A 29-year-old man was arrested yesterday.
He's not a Viking.
Of vandalizing the statue. The first incident happened only 48 hours after the statue was installed with the words, Feed the Homeless First and RIPDB.
How dare he say that?
Yesterday, the statue was sprayed with blue paint hours after it had been professionally cleaned. It's actually a pretty cool statue. It's not your standard type of just singular individual standing there. It is called Earthly Messenger. And it's a life-size bronze statue that features several of Bowie's personas.
Oh, that is cool.
And also speakers that play his music every hour. The statue is located in Aylesbury, the town where Bowie debuted his persona Ziggy Stardust in 1972.
Huh.
The statue was funded through grants and a crowdfunding campaign led by music promoter David Stops.
I can play that song if you want, yeah. The DJ Cummerbund one.
It's called When the Wonton Falls.
Yep.
And so DJ Cummerbund calls it Aletta Van Fleplin.
Well, what are the two songs? That's what I don't know. I'm not...
When the Levee Breaks.
And...
No, that's not When the Levee Breaks.
Case, can you turn it up?
Yep. DJ Cummerbund.
Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And DJ Cummerbund, man, he's got some talent. All right, cool. I have one more story, and then we wrap it up. Gene Simmons makes no bones about the fact that he loathes Kiss's 1979 hit, I Was Made for Loving You.
Oh, that was around the disco era, right?
Exactly. The song, which hit number 11, was the lead single from their seventh album, Dynasty. And although immensely popular... tainted in the New York City rockers for jumping on the then ultra commercial disco bandwagon. During a recent chat with OK Magazine, he was asked if there were any Kiss songs that he wasn't crazy about when it came to the big hits. And he went on revealing, I Was Made for Loving You. He said, I hate playing that song to this day. He said, stadiums full of people jump up and down like biblical locusts. They go nuts with tattoos and grills on. He said, they're still all jumping up and down. And I'm going, do, 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 kill me now. He said,
I just thought you should know.
He said, still to this day, I hate that song. I want to give
it all to you. It's not that bad. No, I disagree with that
that passion of that level of hatred. Yeah. I wouldn't. It doesn't. It's not a complete disco sellout. It's just. It's more an orchestrated, obvious attempt at a hit, at a pop hit.
Yeah,
but that's not bad.
No,
I mean there's some. You know, some artists did go dive into the disco and are some really embarrassing stuff. Not bad.
The only thing that really makes it more of a disco is it's the constant drum beat without any breaks in it and the...
Yeah.
That's Gene's version.
That's me.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Disco, we're going to burn the mother down. It's getting hot here. Yeah, baby. Disco forever. I'm a dancing machine.
All right, well, he hates it.
I hate this.
I just hate
it. I literally want to die.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing here. Here I am, dressed as a Shogun warrior with horns on my shoulder, and this song is making me feel stupid.
You're a demon, for crying out
loud. I'm
a
demon dressed in plastic armor.
Yeah.
And this disco song is an embarrassment. It's sullying my onstage persona, which is a middle-aged man dressed in hard plastic with horns on it. And a kabuki makeup.
All right, he doesn't like it. And there you go. That's what I have for news for you.
It's an embarrassment.
We're going to take a quick break. We will come back in just a moment or two. We're going to get ready to wrap things up. And we have a trip that we're going to give away to Burbank, California.
Ooh.
For a Letter of the Day Word of the Week prize. We'll get the details and the letter in a moment when we return. Stay with us.
Whether social.
Hey, welcome in.
Or anti-social.
Hey, get out.
Join your MMR pals on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Groovy photos, videos, and social commentary. Plus, we find them the perfect place to waste time during the company meetings. Hashtag MMR rocks.
I failed to put something in music news. That was my fault completely.
What did you do?
Well, we had a concert announcement earlier this morning. And it is for Disturbed. They are coming to town, and MMR presents this show Monday, February 18th, which is President's Day, at the Wells Fargo Center. 3 Days Grace is going to open the show. And so there's a general on sale that's a week from tomorrow. So it's on the 26th, 10 a.m. at Wells Fargo Center, Philly.com. But there is a presale that starts next week, and that's 10 a.m. Starting Tuesday to Thursday at 10 p.m. while the supplies last. So if you check out the... at WMMR.com, you can get the presale password for and the complete details on everything. Word of the week next week, by the way, will be a trip for two to Vegas to see Disturbed and meet the band.
Las Vegas?
In January. That would be Las Vegas. Yes, correct. The Vegas.
The Vegas.
Yeah. All right. So we'll have your chance to win that next week. We have another prize for this week that we are going to get closer to winning in just a moment. But I need to do a thank you to the guests that we've had on the show today. Thank you to our wonderful, not your average listener, Dina Marie.
Yes. Fascinating.
Dina Marie hosts a podcast. It's called Twisted Philly. And it's all kind of wild stories about our area. Some of them lore and legend. Others rooted in truth and crime or mysterious deaths or the paranormal and all kinds of interesting things.
I want her to investigate where all of our badge launches actually ended up landing.
That's a good question.
Over the course of these. Because we certainly lost track of every one of them.
We could get her on the great chewed pen mystery.
Yes.
In the main studio.
Twitter investigation capabilities.
So check out her podcast. She just had her millionth download, so it was cool having her in. And from the Franklin Institute, Mr. Derek Pitts.
Yay!
What a guy. What an incredibly intelligent, nice, accommodating individual.
Well-groomed.
Well-groomed as well.
Yes.
Thank you, Steve. We don't want to overlook
that.
We
don't want... People take that effort to come in here looking well-groomed. We appreciate it.
He's great. He is the chief astronomer, and he runs the planetarium at the Franklin Institute, and they have the Tuttleman IMAX Theater showing 2001 A Space Odyssey, and it starts tomorrow, and it goes through November 25th, and there's multiple showings a day. It's only $15, $14 if you are a member. And it's the 70 millimeter film projection of the film in that big surrounding, not just a regular IMAX screen. I mean, it curves around.
What they used to call a Cinerama presentation, okay, which was a semicircular
Yep.
Sort of experience.
All right. So thank you to Mr. Pitts for being here. And thank you to Dunkin' Donuts for stopping by in the Bates Motel as well tonight.
Yes.
The stream is at Bates Motel in Glen Mills. And Nick and Marissa and Steve will be there. And Casey, you're in a different spot tonight.
I am. But I also wanted to mention that there's a cute Dunkin' video that Jasmine, intern Jasmine, former calendar girl Jasmine, did. Out in our green room, it is cute and it's funny. So if you go to our Instagram page, you can check
people
that out.
People tend to like the Jasmine videos. Go figure.
Yeah. But yes, Preston, I'm going to be actually in Westchester tonight. I'll be at the Barnaby's in Westchester from 7 to 9. I'll be there with Bud Light. It's the Philly tour. And we will be giving away tickets to an Eagles home game. And I'll do that before I leave there at 9 o'clock.
All right.
Excellent. Pierre Robert is here. Hello, sir.
Hi there, kids.
Very nice to see you.
Great to see you.
Yeah, man.
Chillier out there today?
It's a little on the nippy side.
You know what, though? Like yesterday, I started to feel it coming a little bit. For autumn, it's okay.
No, I know. I heard you say that earlier. Yeah. You're saying, I like my fall. I like my fall weather, and I understand it. It's just a touch nippier than that.
I think you're right, probably, yeah.
So it's like a degree below that perfect fall weather that's crisp and clean. It's just a little nippy.
Like a jersey, you wear a jersey or a pullover as opposed to having to wear a coat.
Exactly.
I had 0 days where it was the AC was not on and the heat was not on. I went right from air conditioning to the heat, and I was like, I want a few days with just the window open.
Yeah.
So I feel just slightly like we got ripped off a little bit.
I had the exact same experience.
This is the time of year when I put up my pies and preserves, and I don't know.
You're that late on putting them up?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Up my jams, jellies.
Half a month ago, I had mine up. Mrs. Smith came over from the neighborhood church group, and she looked at them and approved of everything.
And what about Pastor Wibley? Was he by?
Pastor Wibley was by, too. Well, he's having a little affair right now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, big scandal in my town.
All right. Well, why don't we just avoid all that and we'll move on to some business and do the letter of the day if you're ready. I don't want to get you in trouble in the neighborhood.
You got it, Padre. Go.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the daily letter.
All right, the Preston and Steve show is brought to you today by the letter.
K is in kaboom.
Oh, yeah, baby. We have a trip for two to the fan screening of Overlord, and that's on Thursday, November 7th in Burbank, California at the AMC Burbank, including round-trip airfare. Two-night hotel stay, including breakfast vouchers for two, plus two tickets to a guided bus tour of infamous Hollywood crime scenes and celebrity death locations. Must be at least 21 years of age. Overlord opens nationwide on November 9th, so we'll give that away tomorrow. What is on your program today, Sa?
I thank you for asking. I will have birthday bucks, 11 a.m., 1 p.m., so we've got a few days, and then all of next week, and then that will wrap up our birthday bucks for the fall, so keep that in mind. Many more chances to win. I will also have a pair of passes, maybe two pair of passes, for the Rival Sons show on Tuesday. Is it Tuesday?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Right, Tuesday. Coming up Tuesday at the Ardmore Music Hall. And I'll have workforce blocks that include a block of The Who. We'll get into The Revivalists. They're coming back, which will be way cool. And they'll play The Met, which is going to be fascinating when that building opens down up on Broad Street. And a block of songs about walking in honor of the AIDS Walk, which is coming up this very weekend. So that'll be fun, too.
Excellent. Let's see. Let me thank our sponsors. Preston Steve Show is brought to you today by Dunkin' Donuts, the official coffee of the Preston and Steve Show. And the Preston and Steve Show runs on Dunkin'. Also, French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville with everything you need for the great outdoors. FrenchCreekOutfitters.com. Why take a chance with anybody else? Going to be an exciting show tomorrow. Our friend Nikki Glaser will be back.
Love her.
Fresh off of Dancing with the Stars. We will have Barnes Courtney in studio for a performance.
Really?
That is correct. We have director Peter Hedges in our studio.
Awesome.
And what is Peter promoting, Casey?
Benson and Hedges.
Oh, no. I know the film.
The cigarette movie.
The cigarette movie.
No,
Ben is back.
Ben is back, which is a powerful movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
And also, and I kid you not, tomorrow morning, we are going to give away a chance for you to win almost $1 billion.
What are you cooking talking about?
It took a lot of work.
Wow.
I had to go to a convenience store.
Yeah. I'm not joking. We will have a chance for you to win close to $1 billion tomorrow morning.
We're a top shelf operation.
Okay, no question in my mind.
That is it. We are done. Rage on. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Yeah, I'm calling about the person who doesn't know one Billy Joel song. Are you kidding me? Come on, people!
Next message.
I just want to send some love out to the police department who helped out this lady who was clogging up one lane of traffic, refilling her gas tank with a handheld gas tank.
Next message.
Oh, that's just great. Wonderful. We open up the season on national TV to get our asses kicked. Oh, my God. I don't know. I'm done.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.